It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Got a great show for you. Alex Lindsay's here. Renee Ritchie. Andy Iannocco has the week off, but good news. Clayton Morris joins us. We'll talk about, of course, the event next week, what we can expect. We'll salt in a little crypto talk. The president says we're fetishizing our phones. Really? And there's a whole lot more, including one more attempt to crack the iPhone security that fails. It's all ahead next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 498, recorded Tuesday, March 15th, 2016. Use your pinky. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Atlassian. Unleash your team's potential with collaborative software tools like HipChat and Jira that'll enable you to work and communicate better together. Visit Atlassian.com to learn more. And by Audible.com. Download the free audiobook of your choice. Go to audible.com/MacBreak. And by FreshBooks, the super simple cloud accounting software that's giving thousands of freelancers and small businesses the tools to save time billing and get paid faster. Try it free at freshbooks.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest Macintosh news. Andy Iannocco is on assignment in Yosemite. Lucky guy, he's at CocoCon and apparently has no internet access. Why aren't you there, Renee Ritchie?
I don't get invited to the fancy stuff. That's why we have Trinity Caldwell on board.
She's there.
Yes.
Yes. It's great to have you from iMore.com. Also joining us, Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Core. Hey, Alex.
Hello, hello.
In his secure bunker somewhere deep beneath the, I don't know what.
I don't think it's deep until you get to 35 feet. So right now, you know, it's still near the surface.
Lava doesn't start in Minecraft until level 10, so.
Right, exactly.
Hey, look who's here filling in for Andy Iannocco. It's great to see him. Clayton Morris, our good buddy, ClaytonMorris.com, at Clayton Morris. You got a bunch of new podcasts, too, and, of course, Fox and Friends every weekend. What's the new podcast?
Oh, it's a podcast I do about empowerment. So I kind of had a rough patch, like, last year, but sort of a reevaluation of, you know, the things that you're doing in your life and what you're chasing after and why you're doing certain things.
Man, you're chasing your dreams.
Yeah, but then you look at it and you're like, am I doing this to make money? Am I doing this because I really want to live, a life? And so that's valuable and meaningful.
That's what happens when you have kids, isn't it?
Right. So the podcast is called Empower, and I just interview people like Byron Katie and Deepak Chopra and things like that, where, you know, we kind of drill in deep about the fears that people face and the things that hold us back and limiting beliefs. So that's... you know, it's really like a sort of a self-help kind of, it more helped me out than anything else.
Help me.
Yeah.
So just before the show, Patrick Delahanty came in, one of our great guys, a programmer, writes a lot of our software, and said, you know, you can unlock an iPhone without any prior knowledge of the code. We should pass this along to the FBI. Yeah. I thought this was debunked. We all saw the video. But then people with, like iMore said, well, no. The guy's clearly unlocking it while he's doing this procedure. So, Renee, can you walk me through this on my iPhone? Let's see if we can do it.
I just tried. I couldn't do it, but I'm on the latest beta, so you might be different.
Oh, yeah. No, this is stock, so to speak. So I'm
what's
just going to...
procedure?
Let's do it, because we're going to walk through it right now. So show the close-up of my phone. How do I
you
prove...
Wanna ask,
okay,
you
see, it's locked. It, yeah. See? So I'm not going to use a finger that would unlock it. This doesn't unlock it. So that's the good news. All right, now, so the first thing I'm going to do is going to get Siri going. What am I going to ask her? What time is it?
Yes.
What time is it? Now this works if you allow Siri. By the way, the simple fix for this would be turn off Siri and lock screen,
yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
But I allow it because I want to be able to ask things like, what time is it? Now what do I do? Now I tap the clock to get into the alarm clock program. And now I want to add ringtones.
So you go to timer at the bottom tab.
The timer tab. Now I'm still not touching the fingerprint reader. Watch that.
Now you want to just click on when timer ends?
When timer ends radar. No, no, I want to buy more tones, baby. I said I want to buy more tones, baby.
Yeah, that's what I get too. It just looks at me and laughs.
Patrick says he was able to get this to open. But see, I'm worried that people are inadvertently unlocking it.
Yeah.
This is the possible thing. And Apple did have to fix this or no?
I haven't seen any record of them fixing it. I mean, lock screen bypasses are so common because the lock screen has an impossible job. It's meant to keep the phone secure but provide you with all manner of conveniences. And sometimes those conflicting, those create edge cases that allow people to get through.
What time is it? Let's try one more time just to see.
You know. The time will be 2:27
yeah.
p.m.
Yeah, I'm going to open it. Oops, and I'm going to go to timer. And I'm going to say when timer ends, buy more tones. Yeah, see... Anybody hear it? Some people in the audience were trying. No. Was anybody able to do it? No, no, no.
No.
I think Patrick's smoking crack. He can't get it to happen again either. Well, he did show me once.
It's really hard because the new Touch ID 2 sensor is so fast, you could unlock it without really realizing it.
Right. All right. So sorry, FBI. I didn't mean to get your hopes up.
Oh, Leo, they could jailbreak their way in or have the NSA.
You know, that's
that
the latest
so
thing is, I mean, we're all assuming that the NSA has 0 days. Nobody knows for sure, although, you know, Snowden said they do. But that was old stuff, right?
I mean, the jailbreak community has 0 days because they're continuing to jailbreak stuff.
So you can jailbreak any iPhone right now without having an unlock?
I don't know what it goes up to, but I mean, I think it goes past what, and I might be wrong here, so I'll double check, but I think it goes past what is currently installed on that iPhone.
Does this mean that McAfee doesn't have to eat his shoe?
Well, I don't, if he didn't know that he was right, does that count?
And then the other thing I've seen, which I think is verified, is that the secure so when you try 10 times to unlock an iPhone and it's set to erase, it doesn't erase the phone. It merely erases the crypto key.
Yes.
Because then, of course, the phone is scrambled with no key. There's nothing anybody can do to read it. And the key is backed up in the secure enclave, right? Or is stored in the secure enclave.
Yes.
And it is possible, is it not, to back up the secure enclave?
I don't think you back up. I want
make a copy thereof. You have to open the phone to do it, I believe.
I don't know if anyone's proven that you can do it without damaging what's stored on there. And I certainly haven't done it, so I don't want to say authoritatively you can or you can't.
That was one
of the things for debate.
This is the problem, is that all of the backdoors that the FBI supposedly could have used, nobody's really, we don't know for sure. So Clayton, you've been good. You've been challenging these guys, district's attorneys and others on Fox and Friends. What? Tell me about those conversations, because I haven't seen them.
Well, what's remarkable is they sort of get out and bloviate, you know, in the press for a few days, and you know, all these, you know, Apple insider linking to it, then it makes the mainstream media. And for instance, Maricopa County, I think it was the county attorney in Maricopa County, and of course, Maricopa County, you know, famous for its sheriff. And ridiculous ways. I think, isn't it Maricopa County where they have the inmates wear pink pink thongs or whatever, like that sheriff, that ridiculous sheriff down there? So
where is that?
Sheriff Joe Arpaio.
Joe Arpaio.
Yep.
Joe Arpaio.
It's in Arizona. The crazy sheriff in Arizona. We all know.
And after this segment aired, there were so many people that wrote to me, so it's crazy down here in Maricopa County. But anyway, they just get on and bloviate. So, for instance, that district attorney basically said he was not going to buy any more new iPhones for his staff, or they're not allowed to. They're not allowed to even go out and buy it themselves. So I was just asking him, you know, well, why, what other phones would you then use? And, he couldn't answer that.
Because they're all vulnerable to the same. Actually, anything would be vulnerable if government agencies were allowed to require tech companies to write firmware. Malicious firmware that would allow them to get in. Yeah. I mean, there's no defense against that.
And of course, the insanity is, if I was running a government agency, I would want to be on the most secure thing that
I can.
Right,
that's the question. You're just like, I said, what was the response of your employees? Basically, you're telling them that they have to use a less secure phone. They're handling all of the county business. You want them on the least secure version of iOS that you could probably get your hands on, or that roll it back? It's insane. What has been the response of your employees that's right, I want to rally around this, you know, this district attorney so that I know that my company and the county can get access to any data on my phone at any time.
And
it's
of course,
insane.
I mean, the sheriff of Maricopa County is kind of an easy target. The president of the United States, a little tougher. And he said, at South by Southwest. Too bad, because he had a good message. He was doing great. He said, we want the tech community to work with us to make government more efficient, more transparent. We really need you guys to help us out. This is the Code for America pitch. And then in the question and answer session afterwards, the moderator quite rightly asks him about the encryption thing, and then he blows the whole thing. He says, well, I'm sure we can work something out. Let's not fetishize smartphones. There has to be a reasonable compromise. And I'm sure that the tech folks sitting in the audience went, oh, well, the hell with that. I'm not working with you. Because this is a hot button topic for tech people. But I also think that what happens is that politicians misunderstand. Look, politics is the art of compromise and negotiation. I understand that. And that's, of course, his point of view is there's nothing that we can't work out if people of goodwill sit down at the table and negotiate. But they make
these straw man arguments, right?
So well, but the problem is that math is not negotiable and encryption exists.
And we have people 3D printing TSA keys now.
Yeah. So because encryption is well known, public key crypto, the methodology is well known. It can be written on a T-shirt. There's a guy with a tattoo. It's not something that you know, the genie's left that bottle. So the only way you could prevent people from getting encryption is by outlawing it. And we've seen there's no question about the consequence of that, because this happened in the crypto wars in the 90s. And Stephen Levy writes a great piece in Medium.
It was fantastic.
But I've been saying this too. I remember us old folks remember when strong encryption was considered munitions. It was classified by the government as munitions. And they said you can't export it, as if, you know, it's a box that you can't leave the borders. And people made it on T-shirts, and so wrote the code on T-shirts.
And I believe, and now we have exploits because people are going after those weak.
Well, that's exactly right. What happened was Netscape said, "All right, I guess we can't make a browser with 256 or 128-bit SSL. We'll make it with 40-bit encryption," because they couldn't make one browser for the U.S. and one browser for the rest of the world. So Netscape had 40-bit, which meant SSL had to support 40-bit. And to this day, 20 years later, we're still insecure, because so many websites support 40-bit encryption, which is easily cracked by modern computers. So,
if you look at Russia, I was talking to someone from Moscow actually at South by Southwest, and if you look at Russia, Russia's of course very upset about Telegram and hasn't made Telegram any less popular.
The irony is Telegram has crappy encryption. They should support Telegram. It's the problem is the other stuff using OTR and strong encryption, like Signal. And Secret and Threema, and I can go on and on, and Wire. And the problem is these are made by wires from Switzerland. Mm-hmm. So now we got to pass a law in Switzerland. And this is the thing that really scares me. I'm afraid, Clayton, this is what's going to happen. Congress is going to step in and pass a law against strong encryption. This is like the Clipper chip, which the NSA invented, which is a chip with a backdoor. And then no American company will be able to make a strong encryption product.
And that's what Apple's been arguing. Overseas. If this is going to happen, then it needs to happen at the congressional level. You're sort of forcing our hand to go in and write some code that doesn't exist and take resources. So if this is going to happen, we're currently adhering to the law that is as it stands on the books right now. Congress needs to come up with legislation that would change that. Sadly, that would be the case. But I don't know. I think you see the likes of Senator Lindsey Graham and others who, now that they've been educated about it, and you have Daryl Issa, who wrote a great piece in Wired a few weeks ago. We had him on the show. And
he's great.
I have to say, he's been very in the congressional
testimony. He was very good and asked some very tough questions of Director James Comey of the FBI.
It's so interesting that you have this sort of reversal. Like, where did Republicans and conservatives go on being conservative when it came to personal liberties and personal freedoms? And there was this reversal. And I think you had this sort of gut check moment at least a few weeks ago, and you saw Daryl Issa and others starting to have educating people about it. And you had Lindsey Graham having a change of heart. And you're starting to see maybe some shifting back to where conservatives have been.
But the Republican Party has always been the party of law and order. It makes sense that you would support, and they always have, support law enforcement. And this is where it gets sticky, because law enforcement wants something that I think history tells us will make us all more vulnerable. Yeah. and make us less safe. Now, if you're a law and or if you're a law and order guy, which I am too, I believe. I mean, this the laws are what made this country great. The rule of law is the single thing that makes this country great, in my opinion, because we all agree if somebody wins an election, whether we like it or not, they're the president. If a court rules that you have to unlock that phone, you know, Tim Cook is not going to say no to the Supreme Court, because if he does, then that over then that means the right to for gays to marry, for instance, can now be just, well, I don't believe in it. And so nobody at Apple is going to say to the Supreme Court, if they say, if it goes all the way to the Supreme Court and they say, Apple, unlock this phone, they will unlock the phone. If Congress makes a law, they will do it. They'll have to do it. But that makes us less safe, and that's the mess. That's the message Tim is trying to get everybody to hear, is that it is a law and order issue.
And if we look at the likelihood of the average person being affected by, you know, terrorism versus their cell phone being hacked, their identity being hacked, all these other things, while they're not necessarily life-threatening, you know, they can turn people around, you know, turn people's lives inside out. And those are the much more likely things to happen when you're in an insecure environment than you know, being a victim. I mean, it's a horrible thing to happen, and it's good, you know, and the press is intense around it, but it's, you know, less likely than a lightning strike.
So I don't know if there are secure phones. There's this black phone from Silent Circle. It is, they say, private by design. Let's assume for a moment, it's based on Android, that it is secure. What does Congress do? Ban this in the United States?
Right. Did you see the language in that written?
Right. So, you know, the operating system itself now has a secret key. But what about apps that are approved by Apple?
Well, OK, I'll tell you this. If Apple does write firmware that the thing that Apple will be asked to write eventually, they're not being asked to write it yet, is firmware that allows a backdoor into the phone. Because when the phone's being used, it's being used unencrypted. Even if you're using Telegram, if you have access to the keyboard, it doesn't matter. So what they'll be asked to do is create firmware that allows government to tap it with a court order, tap into the phone at any time. And that means I don't care what you use, Threema, whatever, if you're typing on the keyboard. So then the app developers have to convince Apple, which Apple can't do, to have a private keyboard. But Apple won't do that because they're not allowed to. So this doesn't protect apps. You'd have to use a hardware platform that isn't compromised by U.S. law enforcement or law enforcement in any other country. Is it possible for Congress to shut the door on encryption?
Well, and I think that also the other question is it possible for Apple to move out of the country? Which we should not. We should may sound like a crazy thing, unless this really gets intense. You know, does Apple move?
Well, they're going to have to move to Trinidad and Tobago or somewhere because.
Caymans.
Because it's going to be somewhere where they're not going to pass a similar law. And the United States' sphere of influence, look at WIPO. The sphere of influence in the United States is so great that it's only the smallest, most desperate country.
And if you look at the language that was used in the reply where they said, you know, if Apple really finds this so burdensome, we could just subpoena iOS and Apple signing keys and do it for them. I mean, they're being super serious about this.
This is the end game. Is an operating system that has a backdoor, period. Now, I have to say, I understand what the president is saying. Why should you have anything that with a duly appointed subpoena or warrant from a law enforcement and a court? Why should you have anything that can't be searched? The only thing we have right now that can't be searched is our brains. They've carved that out. By the way, that's only by precedent. They've carved that out.
Well, and that's, you know, there are, I mean,
Fifth Amendment.
One can argue that is a fuzzy area. They can't prosecute you against a polygraph, but they oftentimes will ask for one, you know,
Well, they would like to break it. If they could break into our brains reliably, don't you think that would be the next thing?
They're less than a decade away.
Right.
You know, so you know, they're less than a decade away, and some would argue that they're less than a couple years away. That, you know, to being able to have a pretty good idea of what you're thinking, you know, maybe not be able to get it verbatim, but have enough information to really very cleanly know whether you're telling the truth or not. You know, much more accurate than a polygraph. So the But the issue thing I think that it, you know, that you get into is that there's this the connection between our phone and us is so much different than anything that's ever been there before. You know, it's really it's I think it's more than your diary, you know, if you keep one, because it's just so, you know, there's so much of what you do that's in there, and I think that's the thing that makes this
not
really
even
complicated,
that
more complicated than a warrant.
The reason why law enforcement wants in here is it has a GPS, a microphone, and a camera.
So I said, I mean, all of these things. It's so
we don't need to tail you anymore because we know exactly where
you
are.
We can just turn on your microphone.
We don't need to bug you anymore because you're carrying a bug. How nice of you.
And we have a warrant. We can just have Apple flip that switch and your phone is live.
So in one way, I think one argument, if I'm the president, one argument I would make is, well, if you choose to carry a surveillance device in your pocket, that's your choice. And as law enforcement, if we are with probable cause and court order investigating a crime, shouldn't we have access to that surveillance device you choose to carry in your pocket?
Well, my thing is, like Slayton said, propose that law, pass that law, and then have someone and then that law can be challenged constitutionally. But there's been no process.
Right.
Like with a lot of things recently, the rush to get what they want is superseding the due process.
No, I think I'm gonna beg to differ. I think this is very deliberate and premeditated, and they finally
came
up with a strategy that I think is like a good move.
Yeah, because we know that Apple was working with them since the fall, right, in private. Why all of a sudden
years.
Then you...
Not just since the fall, for years.
For years, but even, well, since the fall with the San Bernardino case specifically, right? Or, you know, in early December. And so we knew that they were giving them information. They had given them all sorts of data related to that case, all kinds of backups related to that case. And then suddenly the FBI goes public with this.
This is a boon for law enforcement because I have already in my house Amazon Echoes, Xbox One, and a Samsung TV, all of which have microphones and are connected to the internet. And if they can get the right to ask any tech company for special, you know, for firmware that has a law enforcement backdoor in it, they can. There's nowhere I have that I could be private. Nowhere.
Right. What about your Canary or your Nest?
Right.
You know, having access to the camera drop.
I think this is what happened: is law enforcement scratched their head and said, "You know what? This is what do we need? What would be the perfect solution?" Oh. Just a law that's a CALEA for digital technology. CALEA says that telecom companies have to assist law enforcement. What we need is a CALEA for digital technology that says you have to assist law enforcement.
And I think everyone saw it, but last week there was also, I forget the details of it, but they were basically making it overt policy that NSA could pass along the information they collect to local law enforcement.
Isn't that amazing?
As well.
Jesus.
Sorry
to swear, but this deserves it. That's horrific.
Well, And I think that they're clear that Congress has no appetite for this. After SOPA and PIPA, Congress has no appetite
they've
in going
tried
down this path.
They've tried to make a CALEA too before, and they've turned away everything.
And they can't. Congress doesn't want to play this. I mean, this is not – it's not –
they don't now, and this is where Tim Cook's genius was. Because until Tim Cook said no, this wasn't in the public awareness. It is now, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I think we can fully expect it to be more in the public awareness on Monday when Apple comes up. 15 minutes is my guess.
They're going to spend time on
this.
Going to
be dedicated.
Yeah.
During that event, the day before that they, you know, the day before they have to defend it, they're going to make their case in front of millions of people watching that live feed and all the press that it's going to get. And I think that they're going to keep on pushing this down the path. And I think that it is going to make any kind of the issue is that the people who understand what the danger is, they are very active, and then the rest of the population kind of doesn't understand it. And it's not as important to them as taxes or law and order or a general law and order or abortion or whatever those things are. They're much more committed to that than whether their phone's encrypted or not. And so it makes it very unpalatable for Congress to go down that path. So this is kind of a Hail Mary because I think that the law enforcement has decided that they can't win in Congress. And so there's no reason to wait for that or try to push that down the path. This is their chance. And they know, I mean, the risk that they have is they lose this in the Supreme Court. It's over. It will shut. Because now they've created a space race. I mean, you've got Facebook, Google, all these companies are now ramping up for encryption. If the FBI loses this case and why it's kind of dangerous for them to go down this path, if they lose this case, the entire communication industry will be locked out for them.
Well, it's interesting because it's the way you ask the question, right? In polls. do you want terrorists to have be able to keep their data private in an investigation? No, of course not. Oh, okay. Do you want the government to know exactly where your kids are located and your health records made public, and the government to have access to your private photos, emails, information, health data, et cetera? Oh, hell no. I don't want that. So it's this it's this split between what Leo, what you were talking about earlier, this idea that, well, we want law enforcement, right? We want these protections, the rule of law. But do you want an armored Humvee at a pumpkin festival in New Hampshire for Mildred's Pumpkin Festival and tanks that are rolling in to protect us against the off chance that someone is going to bring a bomb to Mildred's pumpkin festival in the fall? And you're seeing this.
We're getting close to that, by the way.
Well, it's every sci-fi movie.
If there were enough Humvees, I think there would be.
This is every this is every dystopian future movie that we watched, right. And these are the bad guys from those movies. You know, and the classic arguments every time, and it's not a movie now; it's real life, and we sort of didn't learn these lessons.
I don't want to, and again, and I often say this: I don't want to get in a quote an argument against government. That's an argument that could be had, and I'm not saying it shouldn't be had, but that's a separate argument than whether, in a nation of laws, there should be a law preventing encryption, and what would be the I think the real question, and Tim Cook has brought this up, and it's very smart of him, and this is where Apple should hit, what would be the consequences of such a law? Would it in fact improve our safety or not? And I think it's so clear that it would not, and the history is there that it would not, that that's the point Apple needs to continue to hammer home. I suspect they will on Monday. Let's take a break, because we've talked about this a lot. But those are two new data points we've got to bring up. You know, the president talking about this. And I'm really glad we could get Clayton on, because he's fighting the good fight on television, no less. Yeah. Any pushback from anybody at Fox over that?
No, I'll say this, because people always say this to me about Fox, right? I've been there almost 9 years now. No one has ever told me what to say, think, or do. First thing I was ever told when I was hired there is be yourself. Good. And that's all I've ever done. So my personal feeling about this is I don't want the government in my phone. Right. And, you know, when I think these bloviating bureaucrats who don't know what the heck they're talking about, I'm going to take them to task on the show. And that's the way that I've always done my job.
Good.
I call BS on both sides, Democrats and Republicans. When they're spin, I can't stand it.
Good. Good. Let's take a break. We will talk about something that's happening next week. And I guess next Tuesday will be the day after, and so we'll have a special kind of Mac break dissecting what Apple has announced. And, of course, we, as always, will cover it live. Are they streaming live, do we know?
Yes.
You got the invitation. What does the invitation say?
10 o'clock at Cupertino.
Loop us in. So yeah, 10 a.m. on Monday the 21st, we will go live with coverage. I think that we will have you, Alex Lindsay. You're checking your schedule. It certainly will be me, because I don't ever get invited to these things. And even if I did, I'd want to be here anchoring it. And Megan Maroney from iOS Today and Tech News Today. And we will be streaming it live, but with commentary. And as I will tell everybody then, if you want it without commentary, you can watch the live feed from Apple. But if you'd like to know what we think, our dissection, commentary on that.
That's the mystery science.
And that's really valuable. Like, I think some people don't realize, I can just watch Apple, but when you put it in context and you give people the background and you tell them sort of what it means to them, it's enormously valuable.
It's like watching a football game, just watching the game or listening. Sometimes people get crazy when they hear the announcers and color commentary.
But and sometimes you come out of the smoke-filled room and you're like, and then when the dust settles and you get back to the hotel and you're like, wait a second.
Well,
that really just, it's hard sometimes in that reality distortion field.
It's one of the reasons I was very glad I got to see almost all of Steve's presentations, because there's a showman par excellence, right. And it was really historic to be able to watch him. On the other hand, it is true that you go out of those things wanting to buy every possible thing they can sell, including iPod socks and hi-fis and all sorts of junk.
And subscribing to Mobile Me.
And subscribing to Mobile Me. And then saner heads prevail, or you know, one hopes, in a day or two. I don't mind sitting a little bit of outside the reality distortion field if possible. We'll talk about what's going to happen next week with two guys who are going and two guys who are staying behind as we continue with Mac Break Weekly. Our show today brought to you, we've had Atlassian as a sponsor for a long time. We've talked about Jira before and HipChat before, but it all comes from one place, Atlassian.com, A-T-L-A-S, Atlas, S-I-A-N. Behind every great human achievement is a team, whether it's genome mapping or bringing 3D printing to the desktop or exploring space or renewable energy or, you know, just planning your next offsite. One way to bring everybody together, the great tools from Atlassian. And we use many of them. When we designed our website, we used Jira all the way to support the development of it. It was a great way to take the team in Austin and the team up here and keep them on the same page. We use HipChat to talk. In fact, we liked it so much, we continue to use HipChat all the time in engineering, in ops, in our web team. It is a great way to stay in touch. HipChat is kind of a messaging platform, but really it's so much more because you can I should show you our HipChat because Russell's been tying in something called Panoptic into our HipChat. And now we know more about what's going on with our servers and our partners' servers than they do. We'll call our partners and say, hey, I see Panoptic and HipChat is saying you're down. What? Maybe they should get HipChat. You also got to take a look at Confluence, create, share content, organize results, bring team members up to speed with the flexibility of Confluence. And, of course, if you've got code, you want to test, review, and manage it in real time, and there's nothing better for that than Bitbucket. Atlassian has got it all. You got to check it out. Atlassian.com. Check them out. Learn how Jira, Confluence, HipChat, and Bitbucket, all four or any one, can give your team everything you need to organize, discuss, and complete shared work. We really love it, and you will too. Atlassian.com. Unleash the potential in your team and build what's next. Atlassian. We thank them for their support in advertising, but also their support in great products that we use every single day. So you got an invitation too, Clayton. You've been to every one of these, haven't you? You come all the way out.
I think there's only one I've missed in the past like 3 years.
Wow.
It was an iPod event. Yeah.
Yeah. So are you looking forward to it?
I am. I'd like to see, I try to look at the broader sort of consumer market for my audience. And I'm, you know, more interested to see where this alleged, 10-inch iPad fits into iPad Pro, fits into that product lineup too. I think that's really the sweet spot of sales for Apple. So I think the majority of my audience probably picks up that size device or even maybe the iPad mini. I think the iPad Pro may be more of a niche product. Although today I was doing some work and at the gym and a guy came over and says, I'm buying one of the iPad Pros. I love that size screen. So
you bring it to the gym, the big screen?
I do. You know, in fact, I put it on the treadmill. I've been watching some lynda.com videos recently and, doing some different things like that. And we'll do that and I'll take it down to the cafe after my workout.
It is great for watching video because it's like having a TV with you. It really is.
Yeah.
Big. Yeah.
We propped it up in bed the other night. We were watching, my wife and I were watching
House of Cards. Let me guess.
She was watching House of Cards, but then I said, you got to watch what Megyn Kelly was just ripping into. Holy smokes. You know, and so I was
so like, you watched the debate on there too. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's great. I think it's a great little TV. You know, it's a great TV. So I'm curious to see how the 10-inch, the alleged 10-inch iPad Pro with that new, the leaked photos of the new keyboard case. I'm not a crazy keyboard guy. I adapt, I think like Renee, like kind of quickly to keyboards. And I love the smart case. I love the smart keyboard case.
That's the one I ended up using. I bought the Logitech Creative Case. It was too bulky and heavy and
it's
big.
It's huge.
And yeah, I thought, like this is bigger MacBook than my Pro. MacBook. I don't need another MacBook. And so you're right. For just casual, like password entry or search terms and stuff like that, the Apple case is fine. It's light. It's portable. That's the one I ended up using.
Yeah. And, it's funny about the iPad Pro. I don't ever take that case off.
Me either.
Rarely do I take it off unless I want to use like the Apple Pencil I'm drawing or something. My son.
No, it's nice to have a keyboard. You get used to it.
Yeah, I end up using it. The battery life is killer. So,
How are they going to do a keyboard on a 10-inch iPad Pro?
Well, that's the question because, as far as I know, like Apple's made some small MacBooks, but they've never made a first-party keyboard that's in the 9.7 to 10-inch range. You know, famously, they said they didn't think netbook keyboards were very good. So, whether they just make the smart connector and they let Logitech and other companies that have a history of making those keyboards do it. But I think that if you look at the smart keyboard case now, there's room on both edges. And on the MacBook, the 12-inch MacBook, Apple goes right to the edge on that. So if they could somehow formulate a keyboard that doesn't necessarily make the keys smaller, just to test it, I stuck my iPad Air on the keyboard case and it doesn't quite reach all the way across, so the keys would have to sort of compact in and shrink in a little bit. But if they could basically use as much of that those square inches as possible, I think they'd have a keyboard that's maybe not quite as functional as the Pro, but gets very close.
And then, of course, an iPhone, a 4-inch iPhone, the SE.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about this. And Renee, have you seen any new rumors cross the wire? I mean, is there anything that we didn't expect?
No, I mean, I think again, the iPod Touch from last year is the perfect perfect symbol for this. It's not the super popular product like the iPhone, but there are millions of people who really love it, and Apple wants to give them the best experience possible. So while a lot of people have moved to the 6S and 6S Plus, there are a percentage, 10 to 15%, mm-hmm. who really want a smaller phone. They want it for their pockets, for their clutches, for one-handed ease of use. And if they can take the iPhone 5S package with some small alterations, but bring the A9 and bring the new EyeSight camera and bring, you know, those technologies to it, then people who really want that form factor, which is 10 to 15 to 20 million people, get a really, really good phone and maybe work their way up that upgrade cycle. So it's sort of win-win for both Apple and us.
And I do think for companies like mine who are just about to refresh, what we're really excited about, of course, is just a less expensive phone that we can buy lots of.
Interesting. Yeah,
you know, so right. I think that's also a big
$100
big
less.
For
how
us.
Much less?
Well, the tech communities forget this part, I think, quite a lot, because we're used to we judge things based on what we like. So I like 128 gigabyte iPhone 6S Plus, but a lot of businesses are buying like 200, 300, 1,000 phones, and they're the ones who buy the 16 gigabyte ones. It's the people who stream a lot of stuff who buy those phones, and for them, if this is 450 like the entry level iPhone 4S is, that's a considerable saving, especially when they buy it in bulk, and they don't need a lot of space because they're using business to business apps and web portals and things like that. So they might still buy a smaller iPhone. Even
they're not going to do an 8 gig or even a 16.
No, I think
they might do a 16.
Yeah, well, they'll do 16 because when you combine, again, there are a lot of companies and some use cases like streamers who just don't need the storage space that's wasted on them. So if they can save money, and especially now that you have app thinning, which is the slicing and the on-demand resources and the bitcode, you can get a lot more on when you have iCloud Photo Library and iCloud and Apple Music. You have all this sort of quote-unquote nearline technology that's making that space more optimized and more useful than ever before. So that's where like people like Alex come in, where they want to buy dozens, if not hundreds, if not thousands of them.
No, yeah, not to thousands yet, but he's growing
all the time though. So,
well, Alex, the issue is these are second phones. A lot of these are employees that already have their own phones. These are second phones.
So for that reason alone, you don't need a very fancy.
And also, would you buy the 16 gigabyte version, which is apparently, you know, allegedly still going to be the baseline
most
size?
Most likely. So, yeah. I mean, the thing that we really care about is actually the quality of the camera, because we do a lot of site surveys. So having a good camera is something that is important to us.
Yeah, so you'll probably be happy.
Straight from the horse's mouth.
Yeah, Apple focuses on cameras a lot. They care. Yeah. And it's interesting now because there's a lot of other cameras and every company does it a little bit differently. It's almost like when you go into an electronics store and you see all the different televisions and different television technologies, where some companies, Apple really wants to reproduce what your eye sees. Like, they don't want to crunch the blacks too much. They don't want to saturate the colors too much. They figure you'll do that in post. So they want to sort of give you, using their image signal processor, they want to give you the best baseline image that they can in the quickest way possible. And I think that for a lot of people is a really good option.
So, Alex, you made a prediction, I think an interesting prediction, that Tim Cook would spend some time talking about the encryption deal. You think he'll kick off with that?
I bet you he will. I mean, this is the thing that Apple usually does is they use that first 15 to 20 minutes anything else they want to say. So I think he's going to open up. That's the primary time he's going to have the press. He knows that they're going to be there waiting for whatever the product is. He has their undivided attention. I think that he's going to use somewhere in that first 15 to 20 minutes, he's going to talk about this fight and make his case as elegantly as he can with 3 days of practice.
Clayton, do you go with a camera crew?
Yeah, we'll have a camera crew there. We'll have our live truck there as well. Yeah.
So this is the kind of thing you would run out the...
I'll be doing live hits beforehand and probably afterwards. I think, you know, I'd be interested to see if he spends like that much time off the top, though. I think he may mention in passing. I think maybe more if they have an iOS preview, talk about how important privacy is to our customers and spend that time maybe a little bit deeper in the show. But I would be really surprised. I think, so, you know, they like to surprise us, to spend 15 minutes off the top. really diving into encryption and that sort of thing. I'd be surprised. But I think they'll mention it definitely off the top, but I don't know how deeply they'll go.
I'm with Alex. I think this is such an important thing for Tim Cook, and I think that given they moved it a week, maybe they moved it a week because something wasn't ready, or maybe they moved it a week because they'd like to be the day before the judge rules.
Yeah, what are they looping us into, Leo, if not this?
What does that mean? It's at one infinite loop, right?
Yeah.
Right. Is this like the final event at one infinite loop?
I don't know. That they put the lid on that big round theater, but it's not till next year. I'm guessing it's going to be the iPhone 8 announcement that they'll open up the new campus. But I don't
know.
There's no way WWDC is going to be in Town Hall. So that's out the door.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
Yeah. We brought you three developers here today.
Yeah. Right. How big is this place that they're going to do the event on Monday?
Oh, it's so small.
Yeah. It's the smallest venue they have.
We were talking about Hamilton on Broadway. It's like a third of the size of Hamilton going to see like a Broadway show.
You 300 know? People, 350 people, something
it's
like
that. It's where the 5K iMac was 2 years ago.
Really? They used yeah. Ago. The last time I was there was when the iPod Sox and the Apple iPod Hi-Fi were announced. And then,
wait a minute, 5K we were there. iMac?
Was and then that? They had it upstairs where you could go, and they had made it into a house and see how all the different rooms, like, Buddy and
Wait a
sis.
Minute, Renee. I think the 5K iMac was in San Jose, was it not?
No, that was the phone, and then a month later we came back for the 5K iMac and the iPads or the iPad Mini.
Sometimes they do infinite loop because they just can't book something or they don't want to book something and tell everybody they've got something else coming up.
They always want less capacity than they have interest. So depending on what the product mix is,
they can't possibly get everybody in no matter what. But when you're down to 350, it gives people like me. Just kind of the slightest bit of, well, of course they didn't invite me because I'm not as important as those other 350 people they invited. And as long as there's no lame bloggers in there, I'll be happy. No, I don't care. So what? Any other surprises? Is there anything else we're expecting that might not?
iOS 9.3. So I'm guessing we'll have Craig Federighi talk about things like night shift and secure, like the secure notes option.
Yeah.
And the education one would make a really good demo because they have all that new classroom and
teacher. What's the education stuff? Tell us about that.
So it's for iPad, and basically it allows you to set it up in schools. And it's like mobile device management, but really optimized for a school setting. So kids can pick up an iPad and log in. And they have what's really cool is because kids can be kindergarten and high school. And while high school kids understand things like an Apple ID versus a PIN code, kindergarten kids and early elementary kids don't. So they'll have a unified login that gets them into the device and on into their accounts at the same time. It'll use on-demand storage. So like, let's say Leo uses the same iPad for 20 days, but then he's away and it's my iPad now. It'll keep as much of Leo's stuff as possible while I'm using it. So if he comes back, it doesn't have to reload everything, but it'll give me space. So it's almost like it's the beginnings of multi-user on iPad. And it also lets the teacher
multi-user
know what
app- is in the code, isn't it? I mean, yes. Haven't we seen it before? But you don't think they'll unlock it?
Not for everyone. Like maybe iOS 10 or iOS 11, because there's a whole bunch of questions that you get. Like it's easy to say that we should have multi-user, but we don't want to have it like we have it on a Mac because it's a very different machine. So how does it keep your data? How does it separate your data? All these are big questions. And education is a very constrained model that they can sort of prototype these things with, because it's all managed by the school system. It's not on a very different user-by-user basis. But it's great. The teacher can push assignments to the kids, get stuff back. Fraser Spears did an excellent article on it for Mac Stories, and it really shows Apple, again, taking that next step towards their traditional base of education.
It's funny.
I hope we get a really good demo on that.
It's very controversial right now in Petaluma because the public schools floated a bond so they could buy iPads for all 7,000 kids K through 12 in Petaluma. And now the school board is getting inundated by parents who are upset because their kids can surf the web for bad things.
Yeah, well, that's a big thing. Like Google has a huge advantage in education because they can provide a persistent environment. And Apple, you know, iCloud does a lot of syncing, but it's not the same kind of log into your account anywhere and use it. So they're trying to make sort of a persistent environment for kids. But their focus is going to be privacy. Like I remember my godkids got a Google account and they came home and told them to log in. And then it said, you can play Pac-Man on your street. And suddenly they're munching cars and houses on their street. But I'm thinking, now everyone knows where my godkids live. So they're going to sort of position this where maybe it's not as ubiquitous and you can't log in everywhere like Google, but we're going to show you all these sort of privacy protections up front.
It's a tough thing. I mean, here in Petaluma, kindergartners and high school seniors have the same content restrictions.
Yeah.
So, clearly a high school senior needs to for research. And the, by the way, that's one of the things kids are complaining about. Is I got to research a paper, and I can't see anything a kindergartner.
Well, and I think that, you know, and I know this is hard for a lot of parents.
Elbow.
The primary content restriction that I still apply with my kids is that they can't take them into their rooms. So they can use, I don't have a lot of
screen restrictions. Yes, we do the same thing. Yeah.
But they have to do it in the living
room. Michael keeps
they
saying, when can I have my computer in my room? I said, no.
Never.
So Georgia says,
when you move out, you know, and I think that that's the, you know, I think that that is the, for me, has been the most important thing that kind of keeps a lot of that sorted out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think at the software level, that's talk about surprises where, you know, Apple can really keep those things secret. And we don't see a ton of leaks. We've seen a bunch of betas, obviously, for, you know, TV OS 9.2. So I think what there's been like 6 betas right now of
Siri dictation. That's awesome.
Yeah. So, dictating username and passwords, which will be great.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can say 734 asterisk capital H lowercase U. GT
and they're trying to do multi-language because that's
I can
the
do
huge,
that?
Yeah, yeah, I mean, as well as Siri understands it. And the huge thing is also a lot of people, when you do entertainment, you might be asking for a movie in Spanish.
That way the NSA, when they turn on the Echo, they can hear me, my password. Right. That makes Isn't it much awesome? Simpler for everyone.
Well, you can use the app still too, and that's the route that I'm going
to. The app's the only way to do it, I think, because
and they've added recently too. Maybe they had this from the beginning, and I just never noticed it. At least it wasn't working in the beginning, but like the most recently used, like if you're putting in your email address, logging into MLB, those types of things, like it's remembering your most recently used email addresses. So if you've got a long email address, Gmail, etc., you know, you've got to plug that information in, but it's at least storing it there. So that I'm excited about. iOS 9.3 is Renee mentioned, and whether or not we'll see any MacBooks. I think it's, you know, I would love to get my hands on a new one of the 12 MacBooks.
Sometime between now and June.
You don't think they'll do it on Monday?
I think that Skylake is getting, like, I think Intel's fixing a lot of the early growing pains with Skylake, but I think that Apple tends to like focused events. And when you have the new iPhone, the new iPad, iOS 9.3, WatchOS 2.0, and then you start adding Macs to it, they might do, if it's not a huge upgrade, like if it's just a Skylake spec boost and not a redesign, they could put that out in a press release at any time. And if it's something bigger, they've done MacBooks at WWDC before.
Well, I do think it's going to be something bigger because just adding another connector to the MacBook would be a very nice thing indeed. And that you'd want to talk about. That's not you don't want to slipstream that out, right? Or not?
Yeah.
What do you want, Clayton, in the new Mac? I presume you have the old MacBook.
Yeah, I have. I have the first.
I love it.
It's great. It's a little slow, you know. And for instance, I built a real estate company, and my just hired an individual, and she was asking me what her old MacBook, one of the shiny white.
Oh,
rounded
God.
One
from, she still has that?
Yeah. Okay. So
plastic MacBook.
I said, just wait a week because this might be the perfect device for you, you know, to be able
I've
to.
I've been telling people on the radio that too, that you don't, this is a bad time to buy a MacBook.
Right.
But maybe not. Maybe Renee's right. Maybe we shouldn't.
I always wait. Just if on the off chance, if there's a 1% chance it'll be at the event, it's always better for
Whenever,
you to wait.
You don't want to buy any Mac or Apple products, period, when there's a.
Yes.
What happens to the air?
But Leah, we all want you to buy one. That's the key, is that we all want you to buy one there because I think that that's very advantageous for the rest of us. It's you really serving the community.
Yes.
By
doing you all a mitzvah.
You take the community.
Exactly. Yeah.
You're a matzmops.
I'm curious what will happen to the air how
does
much.
Does the air survive in a MacBook?
I don't think so. Not very long.
Yeah.
So many people love that 11-inch, though.
They'll keep it until the price point of the MacBook drops, just like they kept the old MacBook around until the Air price got down to to $900. So it'll last for a while, but I think eventually that MacBook is going to be the future of the MacBook.
I will never understand how people use an 11-inch. I see Jason Snell using an 11-inch Air, and
I've seen Dalrymple using it. Like, he used to use that all
Dalrymple,
the time. And it was
really?
Such a contrast. I know, because he was huge Jim Dalrymple sitting all there at the Chieftain pounding away on a tiny 11-inch.
All I can say is economy.
Like, makes him look like Hagar.
Economy seating. That is the push for 11-inch is economy seating. You can actually open it and work on it.
Yeah.
For someone who
I
flies
use the iPad Pro for that now. The iPad Pro is the best airplane computer I've ever had.
Is it good even in economy?
Yeah, and even I had a really horrible economy flight in Delta where I literally had a chair that felt like it was 2 inches in front of me.
Yikes.
And I couldn't open up the MacBook as tiny as it was, but I had the iPad Pro and I was just working away on it.
Wow.
It was great.
Wow, that is a bad chair if you can't open a MacBook.
Yeah.
Wow.
Thanks, Delta.
Wow. But as the shill says, Jim Dalrymple's eyes are no bigger than anyone else's.
And, you know, Serenity uses the 11-inch MacBook Air. I think she's looking up great.
She's but, tiny.
Know, for some people, Georgia uses that, too. I think a lot of people really love that machine.
Yeah. It's so small. I would look like Hagar the Horrible.
I just don't like the lack of vertical pixel height because I just feel claustrophobic. I just want a lot of pixels very clean.
You know, it's all about pixel height, isn't it, really?
It really is.
It comes down to it. I don't even know what you're talking about. The lack of...
On a website, like when you're looking at a web page, if there's not a lot of pixels, like you don't see much of the web.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah.
Or if you're opening Photoshop, you don't see much of the document.
Everything's below the fold.
And it's also the widescreen, so you get even less because of the aspect ratio.
Yeah. Anything else to say about the event? Just that we'll be covering it. We'll be there. You guys will be there. Alex and I will be sitting outside with our nose pressed against the figurative window. Pardon me?
Oh, yeah, Black Milanese Loop.
Black Milanese Loop. The NATO world scrap has been waiting. Where is my... will we have... what do they call those? NATO bands?
Yep, apparently NATO bands. Some new
What
Hermes,
is a NATO band?
Those are the nylon straps. So people who want a sport experience but don't want the plastic one... Sorry, Alex.
Well, Renee, you're the watch band guru. You're the king of watch bands. Nobody else.
I think that's the whole plan, is that I've bought all of them, so they're not getting any more money out of me, so they have to quickly release some more.
What else can we get Renee to spend his bucks on? I love it.
So my big question is whether I'll be able to, because like right now I have a Hermes, and they only sell it as a complete watch, but if they put out new Hermes bands, I'm going to want them, and I don't want another Hermes watch.
You need another Hermes watch.
Renee, when are you doing a podcast about watch bands for...
Yeah. I bet he's got them. I bet he's already got it.
Start that, Alex.
You don't have it already?
I don't have a watch band podcast, no.
Dang.
Call it the bandwagon.
The bandwagon.
Ooh.
Oh. Jason, stop giving the competition ideas.
I just copyrighted it, so
we're
it's
all
good.
Friends here, Leo.
Bandwagon.com. Cool. Watch Band Weekly, Watch Bandwagon. I like it.
And you'll be able to pair multiple watches come next week, too. That'll be nice.
Multiple watches. How common is that?
There are some people who buy like a really nice Apple watch, and because $300 is not the...
Then get a sport
model. Yeah, because they want to work out with it because it's light and they don't care about the band so much.
Yeah,
and,
Kevin Rose should do the Watch Band podcast, shouldn't he? The Hodinkee Watch Band cast.
And it's such a terrible sight for me. My wallet cries whenever I open
it. I felt bad showing you that last week. Did you buy anything there?
I haven't got the lugs yet. They sell lugs that you can get that lets you put any watch band on your Apple Watch.
Well, wait a minute. Say that again. Wait a minute. Hold on
there.
Yeah, you
can get adapters. So Vincent from Slash Gear, I think he was using them, and he was putting Panerai and Omega straps on his Apple Watch. And I just knew that the minute I got those, I would be in bankruptcy.
So does Hodinkee sell those?
I don't know. I know you can get them from third parties, and they're basically they have the Apple lug on one end, and they have just a regular watch connector on the other hand, so you can put almost any band on it and then just connect it to your Apple Watch.
Wow, Apple lug.
Yeah.
I'm surprised Apple didn't patent that lug.
I think they have a program they made for Apple Watch program that still is in its infancy, but eventually they just wanted as many people as possible making them.
Made for Apple Watch, yeah. Yeah, well, it's great to have bands. I mean, it's got to be a profit center for them, but it's nice to have third-party bands as well.
Absolutely.
All right. I guess we've covered Let Us Loop You In. There is the beautiful invitation. There's nothing in this invitation that we can parse.
Rose gold, gold.
Not a thing.
A space black, silver.
Oh, it's all the colors, yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing. Unless, no, nothing.
So here's my Hail Mary prediction.
Oh, good. Let's hear it. I want something about like that. That's what I want.
My Hail Mary prediction on the Loop You In is that Apple Music is going to release loops and segments that people can remix to make their own versions. They've just done some contracting, I think, this week around remixes and licensing and so on and so forth with Apple Music. And I think that opening that up so that you can download pieces of songs in GarageBand, and it's all part of the Apple Music. And I was trying to figure out what loops would be, and that's the only thing I can think of. So that's it's either that or showing
they
off.
They did release a bunch of new loops, didn't they, with the GarageBand?
Well, but they also released a bunch. What if they started? What if Apple Music, subscribers to Apple Music, could download? Back in the early 90s, there was a band called The Shaman who downloaded what they had a thing called a 3-record set called Progen. And a lot of us that were jocks at the time, rave jocks, were using that because you had all the pieces of the songs,
right.
And you could actually, and then there were like 1,000 remixes of Move Any Mountain because you had Progen. And so what if they allowed, that? What if that was part of your Apple Music? You know, it just could be an interesting, connection. And that the chances of that are probably somewhere between 1% and 2%. But that's my Hail Mary.
You know what? You're not so far off because Trent Reznor, of course, is the mm-hmm. creative guy at Beats. He's also Nine Inch Nails, and it was Nine Inch Nails that open sourced their tracks. Remember, they gave those away.
Well, not only did they open source the track, they opened up one song where they bounced all the tracks from Pro Tools into GarageBand, and it was like a master's course in how to build a song. I mean, it was just the most. Gold mine of how to create music was just looking at how they had created one of their Nine Inch Nails songs. So he's the right person to be at Apple.
He gets it. He's already there, right?
Yeah, so I think he could be the one that pushes it. So that's my guess for Loops. We'll see.
Well, let me see if I can open this. I guess I don't have GarageBand on here. Read
Alex
me
DJ
from
for us.
Trent. Hello, all. For quite some time, I've been interested in the idea of allowing you the ability to tinker around with my tracks. One of the first to do this. I don't know about the ProGen tracks, but this was 2005.
Well, ProGen was before, it was 1990 or 91.
Okay.
I mean, it was a long time ago, but it wasn't, it wasn't on in GarageBand. It was literally a record with tracks on it that you could spin up. We'd sample them all into an Emu Emacs and then go from there.
So this was 10 years later. Sometime I've been interested in the idea of allowing you the ability to tinker around with my tracks to create remixes, experiment, embellish, or destroy what's there. I've tried a few years ago to do this in Shockwave. With very limited results, after spending some quality time sitting in hotel rooms on a press tour, it dawned on me the technology now exists. You already have it. It's called GarageBand. So he released the multi-track audio for The Hand That Feeds. The entire thing bounced over from the actual Pro Tools session we recorded it into. I imported and converted the tracks into Apple Loop format so the size would be reasonable, the tempo flexible. And if you have GarageBand, he says... drag the file over to your hard disk and double-click it. Hit the space bar. Listen. Change the tempo. Add new loops. Chop up the vocals. Turn me into a woman. Replay the guitar. Anything you'd like. Isn't that cool? I don't know why it says thanks Leo in there, but I'm glad to take credit for that. So very cool. That's neat. I just downloaded it. I guess I don't have GarageBand. How could I not have GarageBand on it?
Yeah, it's built in.
That's maybe. Do you have to drag it into GarageBand, or maybe open? Maybe open with instead, because it opened in BB Edit. Open with. No, I gotta get my GarageBand.
It's a very old version of GarageBand.
Yeah,
I don't know
maybe
if it's
it doesn't compatible.
Oh, it's gotta be. Let's open GarageBand and see if I can open them. Oh, I don't have it. That's the problem. Why wouldn't I have it?
Well, it's free, but you have to choose to download it.
Do you? I think it comes with all your Macs.
Oh, this is a 2012 Mac. I know it's hard for you to believe I'm using a Mac that old.
I don't believe it.
I know. I like to suffer.
Because you love your stickers so much.
That's pretty cool. Wait a minute. Nine Inch Nails GarageBand. Yeah, I guess
but if you look at the new licensing that they've been working out with remixes and how a lot of remixes are starting to come out, they're figuring out all those bits and pieces. I think there would be a way for metadata to be generated if you were using GarageBand to be able to download a bunch of pieces and remix them and put the songs back up on Apple Music and the artists would still get paid for it, which I think would be interesting because if you use the tools that were licensed against it, people could be building lots of remixes. They could do it for the artists that allow it. And you could end up with a lot of creativity and the artist would still be generating revenue from that. In fact, you may, as a user, may not generate revenue from Remix. It may all go to the artist of the samples that you're using, but you'd be able to, a lot of people put stuff on YouTube. They don't expect to make money on either.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to download GarageBand so we can play with this. And then, do we need to call Alex back or do you need to turn down your quality on Skype TX, Alex? Cause your lip sync is bizarre.
Yeah, no, it's not Skype TX. I'm on a laptop and it's just, I don't know what Skype is like freaking out.
Yeah. We've been reconnecting a couple of times.
Well, no, the sound is great. The video is great. It's just out of sync.
Yeah.
No, it's something about, I don't know what Skype is doing on my computer today. That's different that it is completely, it's just maxing out my all my processors.
You're not using a Surface Book, are you?
No, I'm using it. I have a retina. I mean, I'm, you know, no, I'm not.
I like that gasp, Renee.
Yeah, that would be good.
Jacques fromage.
Hey, am I saying your name wrong? Somebody tweeted me. I should say Rene.
No, you're not saying it wrong, Leo. I mean, if you're in Quebec, you say Rene, but I mean, that's totally, no one does
so
that.
So I'm saying it Quebecois. I'm saying it with the accent on the ne, not the ren.
No, you're doing it fine.
Okay. My sister's middle name was Renee, and I always say Renee.
Yeah. Yeah, totally perfect.
Not Rene.
No.
He said in French class, they taught us that the man is Rene and the woman is Renee.
Yeah, when I was born in South Africa, it'd be Renai.
Renai. Renai. Tell me the Quebecois proper pronunciation again.
Rene.
Okay.
Rene, yeah.
Rene. Rene Richie.
Oui, c'est vraiment ça.
Rene.
Excellent.
Oh, bonjour, René. Comment Léo, ça va?
Comment ça va?
Ça va bien. Et tu?
We're so international. It's amazing.
I can't speak French. I just say everything like this.
Léo Laporte.
Léo Laporte. Oui, oui. We will have more with René. just a little
Clayton.
Bit. And Clayton. Clayton Marie.
Alex.
Alex. But first, a word from Audible. We love the Audible. 180,000. Actually, I bet it's more than that now. Titles in the Audible collection. I should just do a search for... I could do a search in the advanced search. Audible. All categories. All program types. In English, 227,716 books. Ta-da! What? A quarter of a million titles, almost. And, man, everything, you know, from all the Harry Potter books to the latest business titles, 9,371 business titles, How to Win Friends and Influence People, the classic. People tell me, I bet you, Clayton, I bet you read that book.
Years ago. My dad had, you know, like a wall of business books growing up. I definitely read that.
People still say this is a good one. This is like everybody should read this book.
You know what business book everyone should read?
What?
If they haven't already.
What?
Maybe it's just because I'm a real estate nut, but is Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Oh, they got that. That's a great book. I actually have read that one. What the rich teach their kids about money that the poor and middle class do not. Robert Kiyosaki.
If this, I'll throw this down to all the MacBreak audience. If this book doesn't change your life in some way, I would be shocked. If you haven't already read it, if it doesn't totally shift the way that you see investing and you know, saving for retirement, you know, most people are sort of lied to believing that the 401k plan is like the way to, you know, to settle for retirement.
It's not.
It's totally changed everything.
Oh, I'm screwed.
Really? I mean, the average 401k plan when people retire is like $70,000.
Yeah, that's not going to do anything for you.
Oh.
I can't live on $70,000. Audible.com. Here's the deal. You can get this first book free. So, I mean, there's lots of things. The problem is choosing the first one. What we're going to do is sign you up for the Gold account. That's a book a month. And every month, the best. Ooh, Emma Thompson narrating The Turn of the Screw. Wow. Holy cow. That's something they've been doing, Audible has been doing lately, which is taking classics and having famous people like Scarlett Johansson doing Alice in Wonderland read these. And it's just so fun to hear somebody like Richard Armitage doing David Copperfield. Let me play a little bit of this. Just hello, David. Hello. Are you there? It's not coming up. That's a nice thing, by the way. If you go to audible.com, you can listen to a book before you listen to the book. In other words, you can play a little excerpt of it. See if you like the reader. See if you like the style. This first book, it's kind of important, especially if you've been wondering, I don't know, is audio book for me? I don't know if I'm going to like them. Pick a book that you go, something fun. Aziz Ansari's newest modern romance. That'd be fun. He's in it. He reads it. Tina Fey's Bossy Pants. She reads it. It's like having a five-hour Saturday Night Live on your commute. Laugh, cry, and you kiss no bucks goodbye because it's free when you go to audible.com/MacBreak. audible.com/MacBreak. Oh, look, Mindy Kaling. Is everyone hanging out without me and other concerns? Amy Poehler. Yes, please. And not only does Amy Poehler read it, but she's brought in Carol Burnett, Seth Meyers, Kathleen Turner, Patrick Stewart. That's one of the things I love about Audible is when you get these big casts and you get the full cast performances. It's so much fun. Really, the toughest thing is picking a book. But we've given you some good choices, including Rich Dad, Poor Dad. That would be a great starting point. Audible.com/MacBreak. You'll sign up for the Gold account. That's a book a month, plus the Daily Digest of the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. It will transform your commute, your time on the treadmill, your time walking the dog or doing the dishes. I listen to Audible books during all of the above, mostly because my commute's 7 minutes. So with a 7-minute commute, I really got to find other places to listen now. I used to have at least 2 hours a day in the car, and I missed that.
I downloaded The Expanse for the trip out to Cupertino.
Oh, Expanse is awesome. Have you been watching it?
I watched it, and then I was like, but listen, said, download the books now.
Listen, yeah, don't watch anymore until you read. There's quite a few of those, The Expanse series. Is that a trilogy? I think it's a trilogy.
I think it's a trilogy, but they're doing more.
But then there's more, yeah.
Yeah.
He's doing more. I love Audible. I don't know. I always want to give him more time. Wait a minute. Mycroft Holmes by Kareem Abdul-Jabbar? What?
What?
Hey, and I told you, they have everything.
It's amazing.
Apparently, Kareem is like a Holmesian. He's like totally into Sherlock Holmes, and so he decided to write a Sherlock Holmes novel. What? Huh. Might be good.
So great.
If you watched Trumbo, you saw the movie, read the book. That's the other thing. I love to read the books before I see the movies. I don't know why, but I feel like the book is always going to give me more. Audible.com/MacBreak. It's all yours. Audible.com/MacBreak. Offer good in the U.S. and Canada. Zane Lowe. Do we care about Zane Lowe? Do we listen to Beats One religiously?
Breaking worldwide. 24/7.
He's discussing Apple Music, Beats One, Steve Jobs, and more in an incredible interview with Noisy. I feel like when I hear this stuff and read this stuff, I'm too old, I guess. I just missed it. Why don't they have like an hour of Beats One devoted to classical music?
And just, well, they did get the Beats Two, Beats Three, Beats Three.
Are they going to do it though? No,
I don't know.
They own the name.
Yeah, absolutely. And you like I think Trent Reznor said that he modeled it after BBC One when he was in England. And, you know, they obviously have more than
there's
one BBC.
There's BBC Two, Three, and Four. Yeah. I love BBC Four. So it would be nice if they did that, actually.
Are you guys still listening to Beats One? No. I mean, after sort of the initial rush of it, I thought it was – I learned a lot of new music as a result of it, but I just don't think to do it. I've got podcasts that I listen to.
And I just put it on when I don't have anything else to listen to. Yeah, or if I'm just sitting there working and I don't want to be distracted, I just hit it and I start listening.
I keep getting Julie Antonuga, and nothing against Julie Antonuga, but she's a little overexcited.
So excited, Leo. So happy you're listening.
After a while, it's like, okay. How about Apple Music, Clayton? Are you listening to Apple Music? I mean, did you subscribe?
Yeah, I subscribe. That's the one we use. And we have the family share so that my wife can play Hamilton soundtrack nonstop and other show tunes.
I play that on Spotify.
The greatest thing,
Google Music. I play that on Google Music. I'm sorry.
I'll play that through the Sonos. And now, you know, for me, the killer was that Sonos added Apple Music. That was once.
That's critical.
Yeah. That was critical. Yeah.
Although I worry about Sonos. They had layoffs. Mm-hmm. They were very clever in their press release to say, we're going to lay off people. But, oh, by the way, we're going to be streaming and voice. That's the next big thing, and we're going to do that. But I worry because I think competition is getting intense. They make a very nice product, but a very high-priced product. And others are doing similar things. And not having Echo style voice is kind of going to hurt them, I think, in the long run.
Well, I also think the Sonos app, I don't know.
Terrible.
I love Sonos, but it really is a pain in the butt. I mean, it's not intuitive at all. Yeah. Like, I'm saving something to my Sonos favorites. Wait a second. Is that okay? It's not recognizing it over here, but I'm only have a cap on how many things I can save to my favorites. But okay, I can save a podcast, but what about a channel? This channel's not right. It's really kludgy. You know, and the services are not distinguishable too. So you add Apple Music into the Sonos app, and it just kind of just melds into the other ones.
You don't get the Apple Music interface anymore. You get this really funky text heavy right. interface.
Which, you know, the music, I think the Apple Music interface is also, it's burdensome.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
that's why Siri, I think what Apple Music and Siri is so great. You know, we're driving, the kids say, hey, right. you know, they know that I love 80s music. So,
there's a use case, yeah.
Hey, you know, play Hall & Oates' Greatest Hits.
Oh, God, know? Please. No, no, no.
Hey, it's the Philly Roger soul Whittaker. Sound of Hall & Oates. I can't go for that.
I can't complain because I have that actually in my Apple Music. Not I bought it.
Yep.
Not me, personally. My wife, my better half, she loves the 80s music.
I had fun because I left straight out of Compton, and I was in the car, and I started asking Siri to play every song I remember from
nice?
My childhood.
Yeah.
I didn't have to look for CDs.
Right.
I didn't have to try to download. They just played one after the other, all these albums, and it was so nostalgic and so immediate.
Well, and Hamilton's a very good example, although I feel guilty because I feel like, well, shouldn't I just buy this album instead of listening to it? But I don't need to buy it because it's on whatever. I think it's Google Play.
I buy it to support them, but then I still just ask Siri to play it, you know, and it just plays.
Right. So that is, by the way, that is, you know, a strong argument for any streaming music. But I have to say, if you have an Echo and the new Dot, and you tie it into a stereo system, being able to talk to your, I mean, Siri, that's what's great about it, right? You could talk to Siri. Right. Being able to ask for stuff and having it play is awesome, and I want that in my house.
And the great thing, and I hate to be that guy all the time, but Apple Music launched in 100 countries. And, you know, you've got Siri in many, many countries now. So it's like you can use that.
That's true.
So many places.
You say that as a Canadian, knowing that you're left yeah. out so often.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, we don't have any of the Amazon stuff still.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really
and, but I have sad. We have all the iTunes stuff. We have all the Apple Music stuff, all the Siri stuff. It's great.
You know what? The dark horse, and I think the thing that could actually kill Sonos, is Google Chromecast Audio. It has multi-room. And then you don't have to deal with a bad interface because you're doing it on your phone. Yeah, so you open whatever app you want, and you like Spotify or Google Music, and you say, "Oh, there's it." And you have that full interface. I don't think it works with Apple Music. You have that full interface, and you just say, "Okay, play it in you know to the Chromecast Audio attached to my stereo or whatever else." I have them on all my stereos and speakers and everything everywhere.
I wrote about that, I think, a year ago, where I would really love, like, I love the new Apple TV, but I would really like an AirPlay device, like a little AirPlay dongle that has all the logic on the phone, and I could just right. attach that to any speaker system, any TV.
Nobody makes when I'm traveling. That?
Well, Apple would need to make it because, you know, Apple's still a very that's proprietary right. system. And they right now, the solution is the Apple TV, but I don't need that for a lot of the stuff that I want. I could just very easily put a dongle in there and use everything that's built into the phone to stream stuff directly to my TV.
I wish, you know, I wish Sonos, if Sonos had an ability to add AirPlay, I mean, they do with that kludgy setup where you stick the Apple Express.
Yeah.
Or the Apple AirPort TV, Express. Yeah. Yeah, and you connect it and put the little 32-millimeter headphone jack with it, you know, connect your phone that way. I mean, that's that you know, but to be able to add AirPlay, I've tried some of the different AirPlay speakers, and they're kind of hit or miss. They kind of show up once in a while from your AirPlay menu. You're like, why? I'm standing right in front of it. It's right next to the router, and it's not showing up on AirPlay. And so when you, in those moments where you want to just play an album while you're getting ready to go out, you know, and you're upstairs and you're getting showered, and it's not working. You just kind of put the phone down on your sink and you just start listening to stuff, you know, on your phone instead of.
And I found that you know, I have a couple of Sonos speakers, and what my wife uses constantly is I got her one of those Ultimate Ears, like boom tower things or whatever. And you can just carry it around. You set it down. It pairs to multiple phones over Bluetooth. It's like old fashioned, and it works. Like, I want to listen to NPR, and I want to listen to NPR while I'm washing the dishes. I turn it on, you know, and I want to, you know, and I don't have to, you know, I don't have to figure it all out. I don't have a separate app. And so I have to admit, the Sonos that we started getting it all set up, and then we got that, and then we stopped doing.
Here's what I bought, which I'm not necessarily recommending, but I do. It does AirPlay. It does Bluetooth. It does DLNA. It even has a phono jack. It has every possible input, and that's why I got it. So I can stream to it from anything in any way, in any form. And, of course, as soon as I get my Dot, this is the thing the Dot's going to go on. It's from JBL. And you know what's fun about it is it looks like the old Century, JBL Century speakers. You guys, I know some of you did radio in the old days. Remember those Century series speakers?
Yeah, yeah,
every
yeah.
studio had them. And so they've duplicated the kind of weird look of it. It's pricey. It's $1,000. But I got it on a sale. It was like $800. But even at $800, I think it's a little pricey. It sounds great. And the fact that I can just anything, I can AirPlay to it. I can do anything. It's like I have a Chromecast audio hooked into the optical jack also. So it supports just pretty much like every possible.
Did you guys see Pogue's piece on the Dolby Atmos soundbar?
No. Tell me about that.
It looks amazing. So it's a soundbar Yamaha makes it. I think it starts at 1500 and it's full Dolby Atmos. So
which means it comes from above as well as around, right?
Absolutely. And it simulates it. The only thing is you have to have a room where it can bounce signals off the roof, both walls and the back. So what it does is you have to sit in a very specific place where you tune it. But then from the soundbar, and it has a ton of speakers in it, it'll bounce up and down and on both sides to give you that entire 360 sort of cinematic sound. And yeah, that's sort of like not everyone has a room that's ideal to it, but I like that technology is starting to make its way into the home.
Wow.
That's a super immersive experience.
That was a very expensive thing you just said for me.
Somebody wants Dolby Atmos. Wait a minute, before you buy it, do Blu-rays come with Atmos on them? I mean, what source are you using?
We always bother about the source. We figure that out later, Leo. We buy the 4K TV, and then we think about sources.
I mean,
yeah,
let's
come on now.
Okay, I guess you could simulate
an HDR TV with Atmos and nothing to play on it, but I'll have it.
You'll have it. You'll be ready. Actually, you're right. When you upgrade to UHD HDR, get the UHD premium TV set. Actually, it might as well just get the LG OLED.
Yeah,
it's only $8,000.
So jealous.
Yeah, your boss probably, because he buys all the expensive.
No, Derek Kessler, who used to run WebOS Nation, he figured that's the last remaining bit of WebOS in the world, and he wanted
it. It is. It's running WebOS. He's right. He has to buy it. Damn, why wasn't I working for that magazine? And then if you're going to buy that, well, you got to get Atmos 7.1 Atmos sound. Well, I mean, you spent $8,000 on a TV.
That's how this works, right? Lisa's going to run over and strangle me in a second.
I see here on the Dolby Atmos website, there is a growing library of content.
HDR on the Vizio website, right?
Growing library of content. The Age of Adrenaline, Amazing Spider-Man 2, American Sniper.
Amazing Spider-Man. Yeah. They have a sweet
Chappie,
idea.
Enchanted Kingdom, The Expendables 3. Oh, The Fifth Element, Supreme Cinema version. I have to buy a new copy. That would
Chris
be Tucker one. And, yeah, now we're talking. Game of Thrones, the complete first and second season. Dum da da dum dum da, coming from above you. Dum da da dum bum ba 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 bum. Hancock. Oh.
Yeah.
Who doesn't love that? Was that Wickedy Wah guy? Will Smith, yeah.
Yeah.
I call him Wickedy Wah guy. The Hunger Games Part 1, Insurgents. Oh, here's a great movie. Jupiter Ascending.
John Wick, I mean.
John Wick. That was the worst. Keanu Reeves is not an action hero. I'm sorry. Leon, the professional. Oh, I'm sorry. Leon. Mad Max Fury Road. That would be great. Okay. Yes. I would get it just for that. Minions. Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. There's actually, surprisingly, The Wall. Roger Waters' The Wall.
The Smurfs, too. I mean.
The Smurfs, too. I mean, that has to be.
You know what? We talked about that on Sunday with Scott Wilkinson. He says that is the UHD disc to get, the best UHD disc out there. I said, this is the problem with this stuff is you don't care about what you're watching.
It looks so good.
But it looks so good. It's the Smurfs. Not even the Smurfs won.
The Smurfs too.
Gargamel's Revenge. Very Smurfy.
Papa Smurf comes from above.
The Smurfiest disc you can get.
The Smurfs 2 Electric Boogaloo.
Oh, nice.
Oh, but it's beautiful.
Hello, kitty.
Look at that. Oh, God. See, I don't care how surround the sound is. I can't do it. It's from Sony. There, that explains it, right? That's why, because Sony's selling that new Blu-ray player. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Sony always has these weird proprietary formats.
I bet these are almost all Sony titles. What do you bet?
I'm guessing, yeah.
Yeah. That's okay. We can live with it. Sony is this week. In fact, we're going to be covering the GDC, the Game Developers Conference, tomorrow. Father Robert and Chad Johnson will be doing our coverage from GDC. Sony is going to announce tomorrow availability for its VR for a PlayStation 4.
Awesome.
That is going to be very interesting because you know, only a small, tiny fraction of Windows computer owners can run Oculus Rift.
Yeah, I ordered the Oculus. George ordered the HTC Vive. So how many more of these things do we have to buy, Leo?
I bought the Vive and the Oculus, and I guess I have to buy a PlayStation 4 just to run the Sony VR. But this is the next, don't you think the next big thing?
They only have one head.
But they all do different things. I mean, I think that's the interesting thing is they all have slightly different takes. I mean, I may have most of them. And I wonder why. Yeah. So but some of the interactive, when you start getting a hold of things, and you can imagine when you start getting gloves, how a lot of this stuff's going to get, you know, really interesting.
The event is tonight at 5 p.m. Eastern. It's actually, it's soon. It's in 45 minutes.
Wow.
Let's stop the show and just stream that live.
We'll just watch it.
No, I'm sorry. It's not in 45 minutes. It's in 2 hours and 45 minutes. Daylight savings time. Screw me up. Saving
Noah.
Yeah. You know,
the worst.
I know why John Slonina took this week off, because he hates it when I say savings. Apparently, you know this too, Clayton.
Oh, I often joke on the air that if I run for president, it's going to be my only platform, my only policy platform is to get rid of daylight saving time.
Stump it in.
It drives me nuts when I see like lower third graphics and, you know, news stations that like, don't forget to turn your clocks at one hour ahead. It's daylight savings time. They put the S in there. No.
Why is there no S?
Because it's daylight. It's singular.
You're only getting one. You're only saving one.
There's actually, when they take an hour away from me, there is no savings there. That's all I'm saying.
It's not saving nothing.
It's daylight saving time.
It's daylight losing time.
So, I want my hour back.
Website stopdst.com. We do this every 6 months. One of these days it'll take.
All right, look.
Hashtag stopdst.
The Germans created it. It's a product of World War I in order to save coal. And it was resuscitated during the 1970s energy crisis. We're not in the middle of an energy crisis. We're buying SUVs again because they forgot. They have such short-term, memory loss.
Right.
George W. Bush screwed everything up.
When gas is cheap. 17% rise in fatal traffic accidents on yesterday.
Yeah.
$9 million in additional cost in Indiana alone. See, it doesn't even save energy. 68% increase in days lost due to workplace injury on the Monday following. Did you get hurt yesterday? Thank daylight saving time. I did.
They see an uptick in heart attacks because of
25% increase in heart attacks.
See, it's killing people. Government.
People are like, oh my gosh, I'm
forgetting encryption. This is a national debacle.
But this is the short memory thing you were talking about, Clayton, because in a week, nobody will care.
Right.
And then we'll have to wait till next time.
Although I think there are some states that are now, I think there's five or six states that the legislation is actually snaking its way through the process of, let's follow Arizona and actually be reasonable and just not do this anymore.
Yeah,
only thing about Arizona that I think is reasonable. Indiana doesn't do it as well.
Well, there's certain sections of Indiana.
Parts of Indiana.
Which is so weird. So you could get up and be on time for work and drive to work and then be late to work because you cross a time zone. I actually went and did a story on this. I flew in Indiana one time years ago to do a story. And I was there in one time zone and people, would drive and then they would leave work on time. They would almost like get an hour back when they were coming home for the day. It's so bizarre.
Well, the weird thing in Arizona that while the state of Arizona doesn't observe, the Navajo Nation does. So,
sorry, that's just absurd.
Newfoundland is on a half-hour time zone. We just need to fix
that's
all
another
this.
Bad one. No half-hour. No, there's quarter-hour time zones. Why don't stop the insanity? I'm the radical.
For India. It almost makes sense for India because it goes right down the middle of the country, and they just say, "Okay, we're all."
I'm a radical. I think there should be no time zones.
Zulu for everyone.
Zulu and just. And just adjust your idea of what daytime is. It's whenever the sun is out.
Right.
Yes.
Like Thomas Jefferson style.
Yeah.
I'm all for that.
We did Thomas Jefferson. There you go. So is your sense of American history modified at all by Hamilton, Clayton?
There are a few inaccuracies that aren't true to the Ron Chernow book.
I love that book. I'm reading that book now so I can see the show.
It's great. So some of the relationships like Hercules Mulligan and some of the other guys that Hamilton befriended during his time in New York didn't exactly happen in one afternoon.
Right.
But other than that, it's spot on. And It's great. I mean, and I love the setup sort of explaining duels in America. They, you know.
Oh, I know. They have the 10 duel commandments based on the 10 crack commandments.
Great.
Yeah, well, you have to explain duels because it seems insane, frankly, to modern Americans.
It's insane. I mean, that you have to set it up though and explain it in the storyline so that when we get to everyone knows what happens to Alexander Hamilton, then, you know.
It's supposed to happen naturally in pool halls. I mean, that's how we do it these days.
To pool cues? Pool cues at the ready?
We don't have the overhead anymore.
So, good article, by the way, Renee and iMore. What no indie developer wants to hear about the App Store?
That's spun out of the show we did 2 weeks ago when we were just talking about apps.
Yeah. So you kind of summarize the issues.
Yeah, or at least one aspect of it, one perception of it.
Well, the issue that if you're an indie app developer, it doesn't look good.
It looks good in specific, like there'll always be niches in every industry. There are people who can make a really good living over doing a high quality handcrafted product for niches. There are still wooden toys. There are still people who do music. There's all sorts of careers for people, but it's not something that satisfies. There's not room for a million people probably in that model.
Yeah.
And that I think, Clayton is an app developer, so you can correct me if I'm wrong. But I think the perception was that when the App Store opened and Cocoa Touch made everything much more accessible, that you could just write an app and, you know, stay home from then on.
A lot of people thought, and some people did do quite well. Clayton, is it harder? I mean, you're an indie app developer, in effect. Is it harder, you think?
Oh, for sure. I mean, look at Super Bowl ads for,
apps. For Clash of Clans,
Clash of Clans. When you're in that niche, it's going to be much easier. But I think some of the more expensive, really important. I mean, I created a real estate company that I've been working on over the past few years, and hitting a good point where I'm actually hiring now and going the Alex Lindsay route. And I look for apps that are really powerful. Then I'll mention some of them in my picks of the week today. But Take a step beyond what iOS can provide. And for those guys, it's really difficult to survive. Either, maybe they get gobbled up if they go that route, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of longevity for them. And, I'm always kind of checking to see when the last updates were, to see if it's something that I want to invest in for the future. Otherwise, I'm having to really just rely on iOS to do the heavy lifting, whether it's contact management or emails or managing PDFs and those sorts of things. So for those like sort of power tools, you want choice. And iOS is going to be for the mass consumer. It might not provide the heavy lifting that you can get from some great indie developers.
Yeah.
Well, I think that you really have to think about, where that ongoing income is going to come. And it's not, at $1 a piece or $3 a piece or $5 a piece. You have to think about, what kind of, are you going to have in-app purchases? Are you going to have subscription services? Those are all things that I think that, at this point, you really have to think through. I mean, you might be able to make enough to have it be a great year, but it's, with a splash. But if you're going to build a business, or you're going to release one app after the other, and really understand how you're going to do that. But I do think that you just have to be a lot more methodical than you used to be. I don't think that you can't be successful in this market, but I do think that you can't just write good code and expect it to work. Expect it to get rich. You're going to have
to marketing. I mean, no one did marketing for a long time.
Exactly. Well, that's how the other. You're going to build your marketing. How are you going to do it?
Let me say that about app developers. And I think there's also this problem. And I would actually love to go to a tech conference and give a speech around this exact issue, because I think there's this reluctance among app developers, indie app developers, to market themselves. And they think negatively about the marketing aspect. And frankly, I think they're doing a disservice to their users if they're not marketing to them, whether it's email newsletters, providing extra tips and tricks. And, I think certain companies do it well, like Readle. They do some great jobs providing extra context for an app that you bought. Maybe you downloaded Spark, great email client. Well, I love their weekly emails that they send out, because they're providing, that's such a rich app. There's so many different functions in it. Send me a weekly newsletter. I invested in your company. It's not wrong for you to then want to engage with your customers. But I think a lot of indie app developers don't get sales, don't get marketing, and they want to blame other things too. I think there's some mix of that, and there's a lot of truth in the fact that they don't like to market to people, and that's a huge mistake.
There's a thing, too, like when the first apps came out, there was people knew how to develop. They would go and write code, but then they realized they had to do design, too. And many people had never thought about design. But when iOS and then later versions of Android and Palm OS became really well established, they realized they had to invest heavily in design. And design sort of had a renaissance. And now I think the same thing for the last few years has been true of marketing. People would say, I've got to code this, and then maybe I've got to get a designer on this. And now it's like, well, you know, I'm just going to get featured by Apple, or I'll get on a few blogs and everything will be great. But now they really have to realize that I need as good a marketing plan as I have a development roadmap and a design document. I need all of those things in alignment.
It's kind of like any gold rush, though. The first guys in always make the money, and then everybody looks and says, wow, look at all the money they're making, and then the place gets swamped with inept prospectors who don't make any money and lose their shirts, and then everybody says, oh, look, see, it was a bad idea in the first place. I agree with you all, but let me point out, it is an amazing thing. Apple has changed the way software is distributed. I remember when the Mac first came out, there was a store in San Francisco. I befriended the owner. He was proud to have on his shelves every piece of software that was available for the Macintosh. And that's how it came, in a Ziploc bag, in a box if you were lucky, maybe with a manual. And it was a lot of work. You had to go to the distributors to get the software out there. They had to get your software into stores. Now it's a lot easier. There are a lot of great tools for developers. Apple gives away virtually, you know, they give away their tools, and they virtually give away a developer account. And then when you make an app, you don't have to pay for the bandwidth for downloading it. You don't have to worry about creating a transaction platform. Mm-hmm. So there's so many benefits to developers that maybe we just have unreasonable expectations about how much money you're going to make.
Well, I think that it's one of those things that if you're methodical, if you're planning through that process, I think there's a lot of opportunity to make good revenue, with the App Store. I think that the issue is that, you know, I think that Gary Vaynerchuk was actually pretty accurate on talking about marketing or social marketing, is that you got to put a ring on it. It is not going to be a blog post that's going to get, you know, continual sales. It's going to be showing up for, you know, doing things constantly, doing things, you know, and either releasing apps constantly or releasing marketing constantly or releasing training constantly. But you're going to have to do something that keeps turning that pipe. If you're expecting to build a business around
it, totally
otherwise you can do it in the evening.
To people who don't want to market, I don't like to market.
I hate marketing.
Yeah, the problem is, you know, it's like, okay, what's wrong with? I made a conscious decision at the very beginning when I launched my app, ReadQuick, that I needed to, you know what, I needed to make a nice way inside the app for people who, if they wanted more information about to get more out of it, provide your email address.
Yeah,
and you can
nothing
do it or
wrong
not.
With that.
But I'm not going to sell your email. But you know what we're going to do is we're going to send you, you know, some great tips and tricks on how to get more out. Maybe we just partnered with iMore, for instance, you know, which we did, and so you can read iMore inside of ReadQuick. That's a nice email to let people, users, know about that we've partnered with iMore. Now you can read iMore directly inside the app, and that's not wrong. You know, I think that just there's this reluctance on the part of app developers to want to have that communication with, and maybe even launching ads, you know, taking advantage of, you know, the AdWords platform and YouTube, doing some really instructive videos in YouTube. And
it's almost a nobility of suffering in some of the community where they think that they shouldn't do it and they're noble for not doing it. Yeah,
I am.
Right. And then they see their app dry up because no one knows about it. Well, whose fault is that? It's not, you know. It's not Apple's fault. I mean, you know, discovery is, you know, has been a source of pain for a lot of developers, but you've also got to do some heavy lifting yourself.
And legitimate issues, the lack of demo, the ability to do demo version. Lends itself to the in-app purchase, right?
Well, you can release it with an in-app purchase that makes it fully featured. I mean, and so that is the demo to fully featured version.
I'm sure that's Apple's response, but then a lot of developers say,
Well, you can't do time-based things, which is what some of them want. Like they want you. There's arguments either way because some believe their app is so valuable that but so limited in use that if they give you a time trial, you'll use it that one time you need it and then never actually pay for it. Right. But others believe that, you know, and there's other issues too. Like if you give an app your data and then the time runs out and you don't want to buy it and your data is locked in it, how do you get it out? So none of this stuff is simple, but that has been 9 years and we don't at least know what they're thinking about it. That's where I hope Phil Schiller now that he's the unified poobah or you know, head of app store stuff can really lend some clarity and some direction.
I think also the people that are making money at this are looking at the landscape and they're figuring out how to manipulate the landscape. And you're like, how do I manipulate the market?
This is the way it is. Now what do we do?
Rather than complaining about, you know, where the what it should look like, you know, they just take what they have and they make it work, you know. And I think that is, I mean, that's the difference between an entrepreneur and someone who's just, you know, a hobbyist.
Right. The ability to pivot. Renee, you know this story, but back when I was considering the next big version of my app, it was like, well, you know, we haven't updated in like a year. We built a totally new app for iOS 9. From the ground up. Well, and so we decided initially to, you know, basically let people know that we were sort of deprecating the, you know, the iOS 8 version. We were going to charge the same amount for the new version. Here's the new version, which a lot of companies do, right? Heck, Omni Group does this, Fantastical, right? You're paying for Fantastical 2. Yes, you can still use Fantastical 1, but we're not going to really be working on it anymore. And I got one-star reviews and pitchforks, and people just didn't understand that they were buying basically a new app. So I had to go back to this idea that we're just going to charge the same amount, forget it, keeping on the same binary. It's the same amount. Here's a brand new update for you. So basically I had to give away the app update for free just because of all the negative reviews. I had to roll back the idea of doing an in-app purchase for premium features, and it was just pitchforks, and it was really tough. And I said, you know, it makes you want to like not do it.
It's hard. Yeah, and to Clayton's point previously, even if there is like one-on-one relationships with customers are great, but you have to earn that. People are now downloading 300 apps. Sometimes they're downloading 100 games in a week because they're all free to try and they're bored. And they don't want to have 100 emails coming at them from all those apps because those are pop apps to them. Those are the disposable ones. And you sort of have to fight to be one of those premium valuable apps that they want to have a relationship with. And that's not easy anymore either because pCalc is fantastic, but how many calculator apps can that market really sustain? That are at that price point? How many quick reading apps? How many Twitter clients? How many podcast apps? That, you know, still has to shake itself out.
And I think it will continue to do so. But I do think that it is something that you really do have to look at that. I mean, we're developing some apps right now. And, you know, this is a conversation that's happening almost every day of exactly what is the longevity? Do we decide we're going to put something out? There's a couple apps that we're going to release probably next year that or later this year that, you know, I'm putting out because I need them. You know, like if I make some money on it, it's great, but I need them internally for the company. And so I'm just making them for the company and hoping to pay off the, you know, some of the development costs, you know, but there's other ones that we're looking at that, you know, we're trying to figure out exactly how do we have something ongoing that has an ongoing value, ongoing revenue that makes it develop, you know, makes it worth developing. I mean, I think that for the apps that I use all the time, I want them to keep on making money. I don't download a lot of free apps. And the reason I don't download the free apps if there's no, because I don't know how that developer is going to generate revenue. And then I'm afraid of getting committed to it because then it's, you know, it's not going to work. You know, they're not going to update it. And so, you know, I want, you know, I'm happy to pay more, pay subscriptions or pay updates to make sure that the apps that I care about, you know, are still there. You know, I don't have a problem. Unfortunately, don't worry, Clayton, none of the pitchforks came from me.
Hey, let me ask you, and you don't have to say anything, but has Reed Quick been a success? Was it, I mean, you've put a lot of effort into it, a lot of money into it. It's a beautiful website. It's a beautiful app. If you had to do it all again, would you, Clayton?
You know, it was a great learning experience, to be honest.
Okay, there you go. That's your answer there, no, folks.
I mean, as a money maker, I mean, the amount I've spent on development and design and I mean, you know, no, I don't think.
Yeah.
I think if anything, maybe I make a little bit. It's, you know, and I've got the LLC, so it's a nice business expense.
But you've learned. I mean, if you broke even, I think that would be a good case for doing it because you learned a lot, right?
I learned a lot. Break even is probably I probably made more than I broke even, and it still continues to generate, you know, every month, and I get new users every month, which is great. But yeah, to go back and do it again, given my focus now, I just don't see myself doing it.
Let's give you a big plug.
To me, I built it like Alex.
Say again.
Well, I built it like Alex, you know, internally. So right. It was something I wanted to read a lot of content quickly for the news. Right. You know, I had to be up early to do a morning show. That was the whole point of it.
Right. ReadQuickApp.com. Of course, it's on the App Store, but sometimes it's easier just to go to a website and click the download button and get the App Store launched. ReadQuickApp.com. Com. There's a good video on the website that'll explain how it works and why.
Read Quick is an app that teaches you how to speed read.
That's the only I recognize that voice.
That's a good voice.
Here's how it works.
It's a good voice.
Choose an article that you would like to read, then Read Quick displays the article one word at a time at the pace of your choice.
It's kind of amazing that you can actually understand something that's one word at a time, but it does work. You do.
Well, here's what you know. Great thing about hearing from your community, right? By capturing email addresses, being able to have a discussion and dialogue with your users and learning. Like, I never knew that this would help dyslexics or people who have dyslexia or live with dyslexia.
By kind of narrowing the focus so that you don't have other words jangling around.
Yeah, to hear from them saying for the first time in their life they've been able to actually read the news.
Wow.
And so we added, you know, open dyslexic font just for them. You know, there's things, you know, you just learn as you go.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Congratulations on your success.
But yeah, I think breaking even is a good way to look at it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you got to include the cost of your time, too. I mean, right. I'm sure you put a lot of time into that. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Picks of the Week with Renee Ritchie from iMore.com, Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Corps, at Alex Lindsay on the Twitter, and of course Clayton Morris from Fox and Friends and ClaytonMorris.com at Clayton Morris, and the brand new podcast, Get Rich Quick. No,
no, the opposite.
Rich Quick. It's like the app.
Rich Quick. Hey,
that's a yeah.
Ooh,
that's a late
Rich Quick.
You know, I didn't believe I could get rich quick.
Rich Quick 1.0.
I'm in the App Store now. Rich Quick.
I love it. We'll have more in just a moment. Our show today brought to you by FreshBooks. You know, we always try to use, in fact, in every case today, do ads for things that I use and have found great value in. It makes it a recommendation instead of just an advertisement, something I have, you know, had a great experience with. And this has been the case for all three of our advertisers this week at FreshBooks. Absolutely. Discovered FreshBooks when I was working in Toronto with Amber MacArthur doing Call for Help, the TV show up there. And I had to bill them. I had to bill them for my time. I had to bill them for expenses. And I had to bill them in Canadian dollars. And it was just the biggest PITA. I would fire up Word and Excel, get either all the receipts together, send them an invoice. Or more often than not, at the end of the month, it would come and I go, I'll do that next month. And by the time you got four invoices backed up, a couple of things. First of all, that's 4 months you didn't get paid. And it's really a difficult thing to send an invoice, four invoices at one time to a company. They don't like it. That's when Amber, I was complaining about this in Toronto, and Amber said, you ought to really try my friend's company, FreshBooks. And this was such a revelation. I started using it, and I started getting paid faster. I started sending out my invoices every single month because it's so easy. You create a beautiful, professional-looking invoice. You send it to them via email. There's a button that says pay this invoice right on there. Your client can use a lot of different online payment services, all of them really, to pay you, which makes it easy for them. And turns out that clients are just as, you know, peeved by having to pay bills as you are by having to send bills. It's just something that's you got to do, but it's not part of why you're in business. So make it easy for them, and they pay you faster. And as for expenses, you can use the FreshBooks app. Just take pictures of the receipts and just put them right into the invoice. If you bill for time and hours, same thing. And you can even set up FreshBooks to import expenses directly from your bank account, which is really, really cool. So when you use your debit card for that meal, the tank of gas, when you buy a new computer, boom, the purchase recorded instantly in FreshBooks. I love the new iPhone app. You got to take a look at it. You can conduct business anywhere. It's great for people who like come to your house. Like if you're you do a home theater install, or you're a plumber, or you're a handyman. You can present the estimate right there on your phone. You can get their acceptance there. You can send them. You can show them the invoice, and they can even pay with the FreshBooks a chip and pin card reader. It's just so incredible. And I know tax season is coming up. It's probably too late for this year, but for next year, you'll really be glad you're using FreshBooks. It makes the whole process so much easier. Your accountant will love you, or if you do your own taxes, and I think a lot of freelancers, that's what we do, you'll love you. You'll say, thank you, year ago me, for going to FreshBooks.com/MacBreak and signing up for that 30-day free trial. Only thing I ask you is tell them you heard about it on MacBreak Weekly in the How Did You Hear About Us section. FreshBooks.com/MacBreak break. Just try it free for 30 days to see what you think. I know what you'll think. Thank you, FreshBooks. I know that's what I thought. FreshBooks.com/MacBreak. This is the point of the show where we like to do picks of the week. Let me start. Let's start with Alex in the high end.
And I'm not going to disappoint you. So my pick for the week is in kind of the professional video realm. So there's a company that we've done a lot of work with. We own a lot of hardware. Sound devices. So I think some of you guys know we have the USB Pre and 788s and a bunch of sound recorders. Well, they also do video recorders. They do a PIX 240, which I think you guys have a couple of. And
yes, that's what we use. Yeah, yeah.
Love them. They use PIX 260s that you can put in. And so they have a little version of that that I just got a few of and pretty excited about. So this is an E5. This is a Pixie E5. And this is basically does a lot of what a 240, not all of what a PIX 240 does, but a lot of what a PIX 240 does. And really, it acts more like a monitor. So you can hook this to the top of your DSLR. You can also, attach it to stuff. Now, the memory on this guy is this little memory card in the back, and it's USB. So, so if you want to pull it out here, I think I can pull it out. Oops.
What?
Not really easily. So this is a USB card, a USB 3. And you can also, they sell them with shells, and I think they use the M SSD or M memory chips that you can use in here. You can put batteries in them. I don't have a battery in this one right now. It does 4K. It's a super bright screen. I just unplugged it, so it's not very bright right now, but it normally is. And it's just a great little, I've been kind of putting off. I have a lot of Pixies, and I was kind of putting off buying any more. But we're looking at using these for a bunch of records, and it's just a really, really great recorder. I think it's about $1,300, so it's not. And you have scopes, and so if you're doing green screen work, you're doing a lot of other things, you can, review things. You can get all the scopes that you want. You can, there's just a lot you can do with it, and you can, just attach it to your camera. And have it, record your ISOs for you. Wow. And everything else. And so anyway, if you're looking for something like this, and you're looking for kind of the rock solid, always is going to work kind of thing that works really well and has lots of features. This is the one that I would.
You could probably use that on the. A lot of people are using the Sony A7 for video recording, and on at least the older one, you had to have an external recorder to do. 4K 444.
Well, and even if the thing to remember is that what's coming out of your camera, even if you can record internally, what's coming out of the camera is a much higher quality than the H.264 or whatever they're recording internally. We barely ever record internally to any camera because they're all too compressed. Unless it's there's a couple cameras that are Red or Blackmagic that will record RAW or Arri, Alexa. But one of the big reasons we use these recorders is so that we can get that high resolution as high as we want, whether it's Apple ProRes. HQ or even higher, 444, we can capture all of that on these little devices. If you remember, Leo, when we did MacBreak long ago with the huge server raids and the giant cameras and all of those
and you can only record like 12 minutes, right?
Yeah, exactly. We could record just a couple minutes, then we had to dump it all off and start over again. Well, all of that is all of those raids all
it's
those
amazing,
years ago has been reduced to this for 2 hours.
I love technology.
Yeah,
2 hours. Wow,
2 hours of really high resolution footage.
It's so amazing. What a revolutionary time we live in. Forget Hamilton.
Yeah,
I got
exactly.
Lindsay.
Well, every time I see this, I was going, you don't understand. Back in the day when we had to go backwards through the snow with a raid in our hands.
He was from Pixelcore. He had a Pix. He liked to record on the USB. We'll write a rap for you.
Yeah, there you go.
What's his name? Alexander Lindsay.
Exactly. So anyway, that's Pixie E5.
Hey, $1,300. Nothing. Just two Alexes.
Early two Alexes, yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah, exactly. It's cheap.
Nothing. I should have started with you, Clayton Morris, because you're our guest today.
Oh, thank you.
What do you got for us?
Well, as I was mentioning, over the past year, been building a business. And
Is that it's like a real estate investment business, right?
Exactly. So
you're not selling houses. You're not like you didn't get your license and you go out and you sell houses on like Tinkywink for a little extra income.
No. I mean, my wife has her license, but we basically help busy people get turnkey real estate.
Neat.
And yeah, so you know, really
I should do that. I should own a few homes around town to rent them out. Especially in the Airbnb era, has this changed the economics of it?
I mean, I buy my properties in the Midwest, so that's where I have the bulk of the property.
And nobody wants to go there, so you can't really Airbnb them.
Well, I go
terrible. I'm sorry. I apologize to all our friends from the Midwest.
You know, $35,000 house.
Wow.
Three bedroom, one bath. It rents out for $700-$800 a month. So I work with doctors across the country. I have a lot of clients actually from California and other parts of the world.
Is it better than like doing a REIT? I mean, it's a direct investment.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah?
Yeah, and that's the thing, because you'll get these bankers who will tell you, oh, no, don't keep your money with us. We'll just put it in a REIT. We'll give you 2% return. Yeah. It's like, I'd rather get a 12, 15% return year over year. But anyway, that's what I do. So I buy houses, rehab them, and it's been amazing, and it's growing at a great clip.
Good for you.
But I need, I run my whole business on my Mac, right? And there are some limitations, obviously, with the system level apps. The El Capitan apps that a lot of them work great. But for instance, I use Busy Contacts. I was looking for a better way to manage contacts. And so it's been really fantastic. So Busy Contacts in the new version is really great. So, you know, it works great when you're using Busy Contacts if you've got one iCloud content, iCloud content.
Contact list,
address book instead of multiples. But what's great is you can do tags in this. So, and you know, I have lots of conversations with our investors and buyers at different stages of closing. So, you know, John's property may be closing next Friday and we're in the middle of rehabbing 123 Main Street. I need to know like different stages of communication with clients, right? And so I'm just bringing in and hiring an acquisitions manager. Now she'll be able to look at the different stages of conversation through, you know, upcoming events. It ties in with your calendar, messages that have been pulled up. So
this is what I like, is it shows you all the contacts you've had with them. It's kind of like a CRM style thing. So you can see all the activity that you've had with this guy at a glance on the contact sheet.
Right. And so since I've, talked to hundreds of investors, right? I talk, in Australia and California, mm-hmm. I need to know. It's great to be able to say, hey, John, I know last week we were talking about this property or, you were trying to move money out of your 401k or into a self-directed IRA, all these different things. So it's like sort of immediate like name tag on the chest, and you get to like have, almost like memory recall right in front of you when you're having to look up stuff. So tags in with mail. And of course you can add tags to anything too, which is great. And which you can't do in the iOS address book, or I'm sorry, with El Capitan's address book. Right. You can't do tags. So
and this syncs with not just your iCloud contacts, but also with Google, Facebook, and LinkedIn, which is really nice. So,
yeah, exactly.
You got everybody you've ever talked to, and it's all mushed together. It is pricey. It's $50. But if you look at ACT, which people used for years in sales and stuff, this does a lot of the things that ACT did.
Right. So then taking that to the next step with iOS, I use Interact by the folks over at Agile Tortoise, who, of course, make drafts. So mm-hmm. I needed a little extra oomph there. So on the iOS side, Interact for managing contacts is great. So I've sort of stepped it up a level in my contacts management.
Why you don't use something more industrial strength like Salesforce?
I'm not there yet. And, you don't want to – you want to focus on the – focus on revenue first, right? Focus on the things that matter.
Don't spend all your revenue before you make it.
I could go Infusionsoft, right? I could spend thousands and thousands and thousands on these next level tools. Yeah. I think people have a tendency to want to get so caught up in making business cards before they make a business, and I think that's maybe down the line when I have the proper infrastructure for that. But right now it's, little old me and a few people in the house. So there's
a couple of really good, tips. We don't talk enough about kind of useful tools for this kind of thing. I think that's great. Thank you for doing that.
Sure.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. And I use Busy Contacts too, and I don't have any reason to use it. I just like it.
Well, it's got so many extra bells and whistles.
Yeah. You know? I don't do sales or anything, so I don't care. When I talk to somebody, I don't care if I've had contact with them before or whatever, but it's just handy. It's a better address book, frankly.
Right.
And I do love it that it ties into all the other address books I have. That makes it really useful. Very good. Thank you, Clayton. René Richie.
Merci, Leo. Yep. So first of all, I got my Stand with Apple shirt. That's arrived.
Oh, nice. Is it too late to get those?
Yeah, but we're going to do something else soon. So I think that I'll let everyone know when that goes live. Good. But that was the first run. I think hundreds of people got them. So I was super happy about it.
Good.
I have two quick picks. One is Blockhead. It's from our friends at 10-1 Design, who do all sorts of really amazing stuff. And all this is a little attachment that you take off the existing plug on your Apple power adapter, whether I think it works on both the iPad one and the MacBook one. And then you slide this in, and it lets you mount it flush into an outlet. And I can't believe no one ever thought about this before. Yeah. At least no one I've heard of.
I actually had an adapter that did that. That you had to buy a special adapter, and it broke right away. So yeah. This is better.
This is one of those things that Johnny Ive is just, when he saw this the other day, he went, yes.
It's inevitable. I can't believe it. It's inevitable.
Or he said, why are they screwing with my adapter? One or the other. Yeah, it could go either way.
It's such a great idea because now they're not projecting out of the wall all the time. So right. I thought, this is terrific. I'm getting a couple of these, and I'm going to try them out. But just love at first sight. Really, really smart idea.
Nice.
The other thing I wanted to mention is Overcast, talking about apps and different models for them. So Overcast, it went to a patronage model a little while ago, several months ago. It was controversial at the time, but Mark Warmont just pushed out a big update to it. And Overcast, of course, is a podcast app that you might listen to MacBreak Weekly, for example, on, or Security Now, or Twitter, one of the other shows. And this has some nice features. It's got, for example, a dark mode, and it's also got a feature where if there's other files that aren't podcasts, but you want to listen to them on Overcast, you can upload them and then listen to them anytime you want. Some of these features are for the patrons only, people who have, you know, the app is free now, but you can donate. I forget the exact amount, but I paid immediately for like 3 years or something because I like supporting this stuff. And then there's just a whole bunch of really, really cool features. He's also updated it to make it much more battery friendly. So the big EQ thing is gone now because that was using a lot of cycles. But overall, he really cares about the craft of making these apps and making the experience really good. And I use Overcast all the time, especially when I'm in the car. So really, really solid.
So how does the patronage work? Are you kind of like a subscriber?
Yeah, well, I think you donate for like, you can choose how much you want to donate for a year. I have to open the app and double check what it is. But
somebody's saying it's about $1 a month.
Yeah, it works out to that. And that's a great way to sort of promote sustainable apps if you can do it. Absolutely. Yeah.
So but that it is interesting. The question, as an app developer, right? So your patronage features right there, dark theme and file uploads. So then is it really a patronage feature when is it really, you know, a sort of a free feature when you're having to provide patronage to get them? I guess it's interesting.
It's like a thank you model. Thank you for donating. Here's a couple.
Yeah, I mean, it's just semantics. I mean, it's, you know, if you give him money, you get more stuff.
Yeah. Apparently, he's doing really well with it. I mean, he had 4,100 people became patrons just
first
today,
of all,
which is awesome.
He's got a great reputation. He's very well known. He's beloved. And I think patronage models often rely, just as our podcast advertising does, rely on the goodwill, not towards the product necessarily, but towards the person. Do you know what I'm saying? People love Marco, so they're glad to be his patron. Patron's a better word, really, than buying the app. You're being a patron of Marco. And I think that if you've got that reputation, if you've got that name, and if you've got the fans, that's a better way to do it.
Yeah, and if you, like, again, like, if you're a podcaster or you're a developer and you built up that sort of credibility and that sort of goodwill from the community, then it serves both your interests really well.
It's relationship marketing.
It's a trust investment.
It's a trust thing. Overcast is great, yeah.
Yeah.
Tell him to add, I'll be a patron if he adds video.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things, right? He added streaming recently, and that was one of the big requests. But, you know, he's the kind of person who wouldn't just add video. He'd spend like a year or two building the perfect video engine.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, you know what, most of our audience still is audio only.
Yeah.
But enough of it, you know, 20, 30% in some cases, sometimes 50 or 60% are video that you know, I can't tell them, well, you should use Overcast because then I'm cutting off my nose to spot my face.
Well, it's one of those things, too, where, you know, sometimes, like, I don't want to speak for Marco, but some developers will just say, I don't think I can do that well or better, yeah. So I'm just not going to do that for now. And if you need that, good. I totally understand. There's other apps for that. I just can't do that, you know, at least right now.
Completely appropriate. I downloaded a GarageBand. I installed the loops, and then I opened the hand that feeds, and yes, it works even in the modern GarageBand, and this is kind of amazing that you can.
It is so awesome.
Get the tracks for a Nine Inch Nails song, every track, including the lead vocals, and then remix or just ISO. You know, if you just want to hear his vocals, you can ISO the vocals. In the line, got to tune. Isn't that awesome?
Okay. Feel just fine,
'cause you do. I mean, even if you don't do anything with it, it's an education in mixing.
Oh, just watching it. Just watching it.
Just watching it.
How he builds up the song, how they
yeah, like, you know. There's an edit in the vocals. He's popping this in here.
Yeah.
You chew until it bleeds. That's awesome. It's so neat.
Dancing already.
And I am excited. I hope they do this. So that's the rumor or the fact they're going to do this?
No, I totally made that up from scratch.
I saw a story about it. I think they are going to do it. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't.
I thought you were quoting from the story.
No, I wasn't quoting from the story.
Well, I'll have to go back.
Did you guys hear a few weeks ago when David Bowie died, there was that track. I had tweeted it out because I thought it was so amazing. But it's like to have access to that kind of the isolated vocal tracks. They had David Bowie.
Weren't they amazing?
Freddie Mercury, the isolated under pressure tracks.
Yeah.
Oh,
it was amazing.
It was amazing.
I think this is the DVD extras of music. I mean, I think they really should release. If you buy the album, get the tracks. I know they're worried about stealing and sampling and all that, but boy, it's so great.
But if Apple built something that allowed you to do that and to monetize it for the artists, and I mean, that would be a killer feature. You know, that would be something that would have a lot of people that are really into music really rethink where they're at if they're not already using Apple Music.
Yeah. Am I imagining that? Maybe I'm imagining that that I saw a story around that. Maybe I just want it so bad. Oh, I think I was confusing. This is the remixes that Apple Music is getting. That's what I saw.
Right. I think that's the story. There was a story about remixes. I don't think, but I think that could possibly set up the idea that you could let consumers of Apple Music, you know, remix stuff, you know, by releasing songs on Apple Music, you know, that you could. And I've always thought that the subscription service should be, you know, you pay a subscription and you get that, and then you can pay for the songs. I can pay $10 for the Hands That Feed Me broken up into GarageBand, and I'd do that for, you know, take a song that you really love and, you know, buy it
and play with it. Here's why I thought this. The Apple made a deal for these other remixes with a company called Dubset, which has a proprietary technology called MixBank that allows you to remix songs. And then the artist, of course, says yes or no to the remix. But that seems to me that there's an engine there that could be opened to the public.
Right.
Which is very interesting. All right. So maybe it's not such a fantasy. So as you know, I have a fetish. Let's be honest. I do.
Your iPhone. You can't make your phone a fetish.
No, my phone is not fetishized, but my handbags are.
Yes.
Apparently people know that, right? And Ron G, who is we talk on Telegram, sent me a picture of his bag. He says, first of all, it's not a handbag. It's a travel bag from Duluth Trading Company. You've probably all heard of Duluth.
I'm wearing their underwear right now.
I'm wearing their underwear right now, says Clayton Morris. It's a great place.
I love it.
Well, they make this travel bag. It's about $150. So here's what I've been carrying. And I love my, you know, it all came about because my keychain was so big it was giving me sciatica. I was having nerve issues in my leg from a giant.
Same reason I got their underwear.
So, and then I happened to see this. I was in San Diego at the Coronado, and they have a nice leather store, and I saw this bag, and I said, I have to have it. It's just kind of like a saddlebag. And I love it. It's made of Horween leather. It's beautiful, but it doesn't have any real pouches in it, and that's been kind of a problem. So I've been carrying it around, and I like it, but I want some more organization. This is it's less expensive. This is the Duluth Trading Company travel bag, and this has zippers and pouches galore. In fact, it even has, which I really like, and the reason I'm making it a pick on Mac Break Weekly, a special neoprene padded pouch suitable for an iPad. Let me see if I can get this open. Have I already broken it? No, there it is. So you could put the iPad in this neoprene padded pouch, but that's not the last of it. There's pouches all over the place, extra little zipper pouches here and there. You can store everything. And, you know, once you start carrying a bag, and I warn you, don't, you start carrying a lot of stuff in your bag, like headphones and, you know, USB keys with varieties of operating systems and pens and so forth. Should I try the iPad Pro? I doubt the Pro would fit in there. This is, I think, more for the new iPad Pro. But let me just see if it... Well, I take it back. No, see, it's not going to fit in the neoprene pouch. It's too big for... But this is too big for anything, frankly, the iPad Pro. But it would fit a regular iPad in there just fine, or a mini. And I should try it with a MacBook, because that's one thing I do carry around a lot. So just a, you know, my newest fetish object. It's not a Merce. It's a travel bag, and it's from the Duluth Trading Company. They make nice stuff. It really...
European.
It's European carry-all. Really nicely made, and it's got a handle, which my other one didn't. I like it. So there's my pick. I did that for Andy, because Andy's always doing stuff like that. Bags and... you know, dresses, stuff like that. And it is, of course, made from leather from happy cows. Harvested from cows that were already dead. I don't know. So if you're a vegan, I apologize.
Oh, they didn't skin them alive. That's good.
They didn't skin them alive. They were already knocked out. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. Whoa, we had a great studio audience. I don't know. Is there something going on in town that we got all these people here? What's going on? Oh, the show Mac Break Weekly? I heard of that. It's a good show. I enjoy that. Very nice to have you all. If you want to be here, you can email tickets at twit.tv. Although, as I told you, my friend, just show up. We'll let you in. You know, it's not a big deal as long as we've got the room. The reason we ask for emails is so we kind of can do a head count. And my office, so the shows like Security Now, which is coming up, there's really only four or five seats in there. So we don't want anybody to be disappointed. So, but if you're going to be here, we'd love to have it, open studio. And this is, I'm sad to say, kind of the end days for the old Brick House studio, the new Twit Studios. We've leased, and we'll start the build soon. As soon as the landlord finishes his tenant improvements, we're going to start our studio build. We'll move a lot of this over. It will look pretty much the same. And we'll probably be in there, we think, around August or September. So don't delay if you've been thinking of coming here. This is you want to see it. You want to visit your brick. So thank you for coming. Tickets at twit.tv. Of course, if you want to watch live, we are live 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time every Tuesday. Remember, we are now in our summertime here in the United States. So the we moved our clocks. Obviously, UTC does not, but it does mean relative to UTC we've moved. So it is now 1800 UTC that we begin the show. You'll have to do the calculations based on your own summertime. And it's kind of... End it. Stop the insanity. So I don't have to do that. I have to change my whole head and recalculate all my times. If you want to watch live, we'd love it if you do. But if you can't figure out daylight saving time, you can always watch on demand and watch whenever you want. Every show is available. twit.tv/MBW for this one. That's our website. But also in Overcast and any other podcaster you choose, or the great Twit apps, which are available everywhere, and I wish I could take credit for them, but I can't. Actually, I'm glad I can't, because it's our great fans that write those apps. Five apps on the Apple TV. Thanks to Mike and Craig and all the other great developers who've done such a nice job. And thanks to you for being here. But I'm sad to say that it's time to get back to work, because guess what? Break time is over.